So people assume we are just going back to the good old world, which we had, and everything will be normal again in how we are used to normal, in the old fashion. This is, let's say, fiction. It will not happen. The cut which we have now is much too strong in order not to leave traces.
Monday, December 14th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's going to be a show, as you can see by the title, that has a lot of important information to all the same topics as we talk about every single show, as it seems, in regard to COVID-19 and this technocratic takeover. We're going to talk today about a very important thing in regard to the illusion of this and how it all started, sort of, in regard to asymptomatic and how it's pretty clear that the idea of asymptomatic is, as even the right sources, as the mainstream media would tell you, as the World Health Organization and so on, that's their opinion, even they would tell you, is very rare. And yet this was the thing that was used to push us all into lockdown, push healthy people into lockdown, which had never happened before. That's a very important thing we're going to start off with. We're also going to talk about there's an interesting discussion about a term that I've been talking about called virus interference. Now, I don't think these are the same thing. I'm still trying to understand the science in regard to this myself. But there's something called pathogenic priming. As it looks like, there's an incorrect. It's funny. I'm just noticing as we're talking about it right now that it looks like there is, in fact, a typo in the. I'm just going to change it while we're here because, you know, we're all just close friends here. pathogenic. Priming. There we go. Important to make sure these things are correct. So pathogenic priming, which is something that's very, very important to the discussion of the vaccine, the experimental vaccine, and what it could cause in regard to the lack of research around all this, but in regard to how it interacts with the live viruses in the world and how your body will react to these things after the vaccine and how there's been, I guess precedence, the wrong word, history around this that shows us that this has happened and can happen, especially when you skip animal trials, just like we did, except they don't want us to talk about that. Now, I'm going to start today, and as well as some other incredibly important topics, as always, but I'm going to start out with something I find to be very interesting that I haven't really been talking about. And it's going to be about the election, and we're going to talk about. Sorry, guys. Sorry for the delay here. I'm getting all kinds of messages saying that this isn't actually live or that we have the wrong link going on here. I'm sorry if this is incorrect information and somebody is saying this and it's not actually happening. But let me double check really quickly for all you on other platforms. This is quite interesting. It looks like I don't know if we're being censored in real time. Anyway, let's just get right back into it. I'm not going to worry about the YouTube ins and outs of all their censorship, but I'm going to start off today with a discussion of Dominion Software and the idea around the election and something that I find to be very relevant. And now this is regardless of the two-party illusion, whether you support Trump or Biden, this is something that should be relevant to every single person who cares about honesty in this whole process, who cares about transparency. Seemingly something that no one cares about today if their side tells them not to. That's, of course, if you are lost in the two-party illusion, which I think most Americans seem to be today, or at least that's what they want us to believe. So let's start off. And again, I apologize for the rocky start there. I'm still getting texts and messages from people saying, we can't see you. I don't know what's going on. So hopefully it does look like we have a very low turnout on the one channel there. So I'm assuming there's something weird going on with the YouTube link. Who cares? Hashtag boycott YouTube. Now, let's start off with this very important discussion. Dominion Software intentionally designed to influence election results, forensics report. Now, this, of course, is coming from documentation that has actual, that is official, because this is being dismissed by lots of people because they don't like what it's pointing to. Now, here's the actual document. Allied Security Operations Group. I'm going to look at this in just a moment, but understand that this is an official document. Now, it says this is the forensic audit of Dominion's voting software in Michigan specifically. Now, it says, quote, "We conclude that Dominion voting system is intentionally, that's very important, and purposefully designed with inherent errors to create systemic fraud and influence election results," end quote. Russell Ramsland Jr., co-founder of Allied Security Operations Group, said this in his preliminary report. Now, that doesn't mean, understand that this is preliminary and it's the beginning report, but this is a huge thing to be stated about our voting software, our voting machines, rather, that have been used long before this election. And as I'm trying to point out, is this is nothing new. This has been going on every election, as I continue to point to, and I have the video included here that I've put this is from the 18th of November. Voting machine fraud goes much deeper and further back than you think. And it shows us that the very people that are right now acting like this is fake news, like voter fraud is a myth, or rather specifically election fraud is a myth, you'll find those very entities pointing to the other side back when it suited their interests. But now it's a myth. It's fake news. The point is two-party illusion, guys. It's always there, and it's used by both sides. If you think that only one side cheated in this election, then you're woefully mistaken. But the point is to realize that we can see it now, and we need to get past the Biden-Trump scenario and realize that our system is broken. I mean, even if you actually believed in Trump and you thought Trump was going to change, even if he really was, everything you thought he was, do you not see how the system is designed to stop that? We all need to come together as Americans and realize that we can if we just see past the two-party illusion. And here is an entity pointing to the system. Yes, in regard to the election that could influence Trump's win or loss, but that's ultimately irrelevant in the larger picture of the fact that this is happening. Quote, "The system intentionally generates an enormously high number of ballot errors. The electronic ballots are then transferred for adjudication. I don't know why I stumbled with that one. The intentional errors lead to bulk adjudication of ballots with no oversight, no transparency, and no audit trail." So it looks like a glitch, but it's all arguably, as this is pointing out, something that was intentionally done that leads to that. Errors that lead to them having to, as they're telling us, reach out and grab these things. This leads to voter or election fraud. Based on our study, we conclude that Dominion voting system should not be used in Michigan. We further conclude the results of Antrim County should not have been certified. Now, that's their opinion based on what they're seeing. You can disagree with that, you can disagree with any of it. But the point is that they're finding, and arguably, these are things that are being discussed in mainstream right now, that these machines were set up to manipulate the election. By the way, just like we pointed out numerous times in the past about Clint Curtis, and the idea that this is not new, that this is the discussion of Clint Curtis that we played before, is in regard to Diebold machines from years ago, that he says he testified in front of Congress that he was paid to manipulate these machines. And guess what? Nothing happened. And they used them in the very next election. In fact, they're still being used to this day.
Mr. Curtis, would you please state your full name for the record?
My name is Clinton Eugene Curtis.
And where do you reside?
Tallahassee, Florida.
And what is your profession?
I'm a computer programmer.
Would you please speak into the microphone so the audience can hear your testimony?
I'm a computer programmer.
Mr. Curtis, are there programs that can be used to secretly fix elections?
Yes.
How do you know that to be the case?
Because in October of 2000, I wrote a prototype for President Congressman Tom Feeney at the company I work for in Oviedo, Florida, that did just that.
And when you say did just that, it would rig an election?
It would flip the vote 51-49 to whoever you wanted it to go to and whichever race you wanted to win.
And would that program that you designed be something that elections officials that might be on county boards of elections could detect?
They'd never see it.
Mr. Would you answer that question once again?
They would never see it.
So how would such a program, a secret program that fixes the election, how could it be detected?
You would have to view it either in the source code, or you'd have to have a receipt and then count the hard paper against the actual vote total. Other than that, you won't see it.
All right, Mr. Curtis, if you had been asked you or others with your professional expertise have been asked to design a protective program that would protect the Ohio elections from against such software to fix the election. Could you have done so?
If we've been asked to make a program that could fix the election, sure, anybody can do it.
No, could you have designed a program or a procedure or a protocol that would have protected Ohio against this kind of rigging?
No, you have to look at the source code. You have to get probably programmers from both or all parties to look at the source code and determine if there's anything in there that shouldn't be there. I mean, it's a simple program. You're adding one to a person's total. It's 100 lines of code tops.
All right. Are you aware of whether there was any protective action in Ohio against this kind of vote rigging through software?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
You were not asked to assist in the development of any protective system, is that correct?
No, I was not.
Given the availability of such vote rigging software and the testimony that has been given under oath of substantial statistical anomalies and gross differences between exit polling data and the actual tabulated results, do you have an opinion whether or not the Ohio election, presidential election, was hacked?
Yes, I would say it was. I mean, if you have exit polling data that is significantly off from the vote, then it's probably hacked.
Now, apologize for that going as long as it did. I only wanted to play the beginning part. I was just figuring out what was going on there behind the scenes, and you're going to laugh. And you're not going to be surprised. Of course, what happened essentially was the YouTube link. They just cut off the show and restarted a totally separate link. I've talked about this in the past, and I'm only telling you because I find it so humorous and quite pathetic that is how afraid these people are of what we're talking about here. They're terrified of you. They're terrified of the facts, the truth. And it just makes me laugh because of how irrelevant they're becoming. There's so many other platforms this is going to be on. But the point being is all I had to do was quickly update the article that I have on the website because I don't even share the YouTube link anymore. I share the article with the embedded video. So I just updated it. Sorry, YouTube. Weak try. I just think it's hilarious. But this is the stuff that they desperately don't want you hearing. Now, the fact that this is happening is very, very real. There's no misunderstanding what this is. Now, the problem is that a lot of people won't want to hear this because they hate Trump. And won't realize that this is sort of irrelevant in that it matters to that. But in the bigger discussion, it shows you that the whole thing is broken. Or they'll say that I'm supporting Trump by pointing to these facts, which is just ignorant. But let's continue. It says the system intentionally generates an enormously high number of ballot errors. I read this, but I want to read this again. The electronic ballots are then transferred for adjudication, right? So they make it happen. Then they transfer those for the argument that there's these errors, right? Then the intentional errors lead to the bulk adjudication of ballots with no oversight, no transparency, no audit trail, right? That's the point. Get them to a point to where they can be manipulated. This is what this audit found. This leads to voter election fraud, right? Just like Clint Curtis was just telling you, and they never did anything about then. It says, Ramsland, a former Reagan administration official who has worked for NASA and others from the group, explained Dominion Products and Antrim County earlier this month as part of the ongoing case. It says the 13th Circuit Judge Kevin Eisenheimer approved the forensic examination in Bailey versus Antrim County, which alleges the infamous vote flip county officials reported last month may have not been the result of human error, as officials had alleged. Sort of a big deal, wouldn't you say? I find it fascinating that this is just completely ignored. Now, here's what the actual document had to say, and you're going to find this much more relevant. It says, we conclude that the Dominion voting system is intentionally and purposely designed with inherent errors to create systemic fraud and influence election results. The system intentional, it's essentially the same thing, right? But I just want to make sure that you see that it is in this document, that this is their report, and it's flat out telling you, not that it was just an error, that it could have been, or it's possibly, that they believe there was intentional and purposeful deceit in order to create a situation where it could be where cheating could take place. And of course, that they're saying that they don't think that this county should be certified. Understand that this is how this system works, guys. As I said in this video, it has been here years. You can go back as far as you want and you'll find evidence and allegations of this exact thing. The idea why Trump said in the beginning of this that, oh, Pennsylvania, bad things happen there. Why? Every single election, there's the discussions of how there's voter fraud and election fraud in Pennsylvania. And every single election, there's evidence and paper trails. I mean, it's a joke. And every single time, we roll right back into it. So as we're staring at this document that is confirming, in their opinion, in their research, which you should ask for more, you should ask for other opinions, but this is clear. This is the argument from the mainstream media. Don't buy the debunked Dominion voting machine conspiracy. I mean, irrespective of Trump or any of this, it's impossible to call it a conspiracy theory when we have so much evidence. But the media, the mainstream, do not care about evidence when it comes to a point that they have decided to die on. Well, because they're told to, because they're doing their job, which is to misinform you exactly the right way. It's just unbelievable to me. Now, on top of that, before we get into the asymptomatic discussion, we're also seeing an interesting thing here that I felt like I wanted to report to you because, again, do your best as an intelligent human being to not get bogged down in the two-party discussion here. I'm not supporting Trump or Biden. I honestly think that none of us should support any of them. I think we've been so far away from any idea of representative government today that we should be saying vote no one 2020, vote no one 2024, until we can actually see that we are actually being represented. All the Trump supporters out there, please recognize that's what just happened. Okay, so we need to find a way to make this system actually function or do something completely different. I'm not arguing to have all the answers. That's never the case. But I think we can all acknowledge, whether or not a person pointing it out has the answer, that there's a problem. First step to solving any problem is admitting that you have one. But what we're staring at here is Trump electors, which, by the way, you could argue are illegitimate, from the state of Michigan, were denied entry into a Michigan state capitol after Governor Whitmer and others officials sent 200-plus troops to guard their building. And here's what you're seeing. You know, the volume, it's real muffled. Why? Because he's wearing a mask. Go figure. But he's basically saying you're not allowed in. That everyone in here is already accounted for. You can't come in. And they basically say, well, we're Trump electors. The problem here is, guys, that there are arguments that these people are illegitimate because the other electors are the ones from the current. The point is that this is disputed. And I guess since something like 1890, this hasn't happened since then. But the reason I'm showing you this is because even if this is deceitful, even if this is an attempt to steal it by Trump or attempt by Biden to cheat Trump out of his win, this is history. This is an incredibly important and, I mean, something that hasn't happened in over 100 years. That's a big deal. So I just find this very relevant to understand that we're watching something that I think signifies sort of the collapse of what we have right now. And what we need to do as Americans is realize that we don't want these autocrats and dictators to patch up a broken thing and keep pushing it through to keep their power. We need to realize that this is broken and change it. That's where we should be right now. And I believe that all of us can get on that page. Now, the other thing I want to say before we move on is that the scary part about this is that, and this is where I'm worried this is going to go. You have all these Trump supporters out there that I am desperately trying to get to see that they have been manipulated in the two-party illusion, not even in Trump, but the election. Even if you believe that Trump was really going to win, the point is that the system wouldn't let it happen. So even though we come to the point from different ends, we can see that the system is broken. So let's all come together and try to fight that and change that. But this is where it seems to be leaning, into the other side. So instead of changing the system, let's give the system more power. Let's call for martial law. That's what these Trump supporters and QAnon and all of these circles are screaming about right now, that they want Trump. They actually want him to declare martial law. And what, cross your fingers and hope it all works out? I mean, it's incredible. It's all based on the blind faith in one person. That's called a savior complex. And that's the opposite of what any intelligent and a person with self-determination should do. They're supposed to be working for us. We forget that. But here we see it. I mean, this person has 400,000 followers. Trump still has two major paths to victory. He says path one, civil path with big Scottish win. Path two, military path using his 2018 executive order, which is what they're arguably saying is what he did it for, which I disagree with that. Let's all hope Scottus makes the right decision. So using the military to take power. Now, look, even if you argue that Trump actually won, I mean, look, there's obvious deception here or fraud. I think anyone honest can see that. But I do think it happened on all sides here. But nonetheless, using the military to take it, there's no way that ends in a positive thing. There's no way that ends in peace and prosperity and a, quote, return to normal, which, you know, normal. What was normal before? This is where we were before, minus the technocratic COVID-19 illusion. I just want to, I'm concerned that this is where it would go, and I'm trying to caution people from calling for the very thing that they want to achieve. Let's change this together, guys. As well as one more point that I thought I had, forgot I added. This was coming out today. Everybody's sharing it. Look at this, 30,000 retweets. Breaking, President Trump will pardon Julian Assange. All these people that shared this without actually looking into it were wrong. Even he came back around and said, oh, sorry, I was mistaken. Somebody gave me false information, which, by the way, happens. That happened to me just the other day. So the point is not that you shouldn't share things if you believe you've got a good source, but that you should do your own due diligence as the individual looking at that information. Nonetheless, it happens, but understand that this is interesting as he's reporting that President Trump was pardoning Julian Assange, but which, by the way, oh, and I want to quickly point out, I'm having Taylor Hudak on from the Assange Vigil, I believe on the Saturday after next, to talk about updates with Julian Assange. It'll be a Rockfin exclusive. So keep an eye out for that, because I want to make sure you guys are up to date on what's happening with him. But I want to point out that I don't think you don't pardon somebody who's not a criminal. Somebody who's actually innocent, that's the victim of a dictator, authoritarian government, should be vindicated, cleared, released. When you pardon someone, you're claiming they committed a crime and you're pardoning for that crime. Julian Assange committed no crime. So I don't like the terminology and the way this is all going. By the way, I would say the same for Snowden, by the way. Nonetheless, I want to argue that I think he did this on purpose. Maybe he did this on purpose, right? So this is 10/19, December 14th. And then, I know, hour and a half later, December 14th, he says, nah, I got wrong information. That, I'm going to just theorize that maybe that was a artfully intentionally meant to get people excited about it, get it spread, make people think it's happening, and then pull it back. So then all of a sudden you have unbelievable pressure on Donald Trump to actually do it. So Pastor Mark Burns, maybe you're smarter than we think. So that would be something I would like to see. In any case, do your due diligence, people. That's important. And speaking of due diligence, let's get into the asymptomatic spread. This is a very, very important topic. This is from November 22nd, and probably most of you haven't even heard this before. Symptomatic spread revisited. Now, this is talking about the concept of asymptomatic spread. Asymptomatic spread revisited. This is about the idea that the people who don't appear to be sick yet are able to spread it. The super spreaders, we're told. And how that was the justification for quarantining healthy people, which had never happened before this, in regard to a virus, you know, whatever, a health issue. Now, as it says, the phrase fog of war is attributed to Carl von Clausewitz. Now, this is the idea that in the midst of war, the media says this in the fog of breaking news to cover their bad research. But the idea is that this is in the midst of chaos and war. You don't really know who's making what decisions and why. It all just happens and you're just stuck going along with it. But that's just a lack of transparency. But let's pretend that's because we're in the middle of a fog of war and they're all just, of course, those are different topics. But that's the idea that he says in 2020, we're experiencing the fog of disease mitigation. Same concept. And yeah, we can all see that. We don't know why or who or really what's going on. They're just doing it and screaming it's for your safety. He says the initial round of lockdowns was not about suppressing the virus, but slowing it for one reason. Now, we've all forgotten this. They said this very clearly. We're now saying that this is because we're all going to die. But this in the beginning was like, well, we just want to lessen ease the hospital scenario. It was not about suppressing the virus, but slowing it for one reason, to preserve hospital capacity. That was their statement. Whether and to what extent the curve was actually flattened will probably be debated for years. And this is just this is reality versus our narrative. Right. The fact that we could have been in a flatten the curve quarantine for 30 years. And if it eventually went down, hey, success, we did it. 30 years of quarantine and we finally flattened that curve. Right. That's perception. Maybe, the argument is no, it just went away on its own or after however long the period is. They will forever argue that they did this. Just like Trump will, cause in foreign policy regard, cause some kind of flagrant action that causes chaos, and then argue that they're the reason they won the Syrian war because Russia did something. Or, that it's disconnected from reality, but it's about politics. But it says the volume of the curves The volume of the curves, tall and quick, or short and long, was the same either way. People were going to get the bug until the bug burns out or herd immunity. This is their argument. Gradually and sometimes almost imperceptibly, I would argue mostly imperceptibly, the rationale for the lockdowns just changed. No new discussions, really. It just sort of evolved, and they acted like they were continuing to do the same thing. The curve flattening became an end in itself, apart from hospital capacity. Perhaps this was because the hospital crowding issue was extremely localized to, you know, two New York boroughs, while hospitals around the country emptied out for patients who didn't show up. 350 hospitals furloughed workers. Why did nobody, other than independent media like us, or say, I think Jason Burmes covered this, or plenty of other people out there, why did nobody in the mainstream talk about it? Well, you know why. Because they're not interested in giving you the full picture. Whether that's because they just simply know the truth and want to deceive you, or because they've been convinced that lying for their truth is the best thing they can do today. Because telling you this, although true, might make you question the narrative, and that's dangerous for everybody, right? So suddenly the truth becomes fake news because they're worried about your perception, even if the information is true. We are literally living in a post-truth world that they have created. The failure was embarrassing enough, it says, well, to anybody that actually cared to acknowledge it, given the overwhelming costs. Schools closed. Commercial rights were vanquished. Shelter-in-place orders from wartime were imposed. Travel nearly stopped. All large events were canceled, and so on. Clearly, he says, there needed to be a good, solid, science-based reason for why the politicians and their advisors had, on their own, decided to take away much of what we once regarded as human rights. He says, talk about this began in March but faded. And this is interesting. You can actually see the Google Trends. Sometime in summer, he says, the idea of asymptomatic spread started to trend bit by bit. Right, so we're at a point now where we're going, wait a minute, this doesn't really add up. How are you forcing us as healthy people in general? I remember we had the doctors from California who spoke out and said this has never happened before. And, you know, they just called them conspiracy theorists and shouted them down and didn't want anyone to listen. But then suddenly they came up with the idea, or rather just used the concept of this, the idea that makes basically anybody anywhere all the time a potential carrier. So fear-mongering. Sometime in summer, the idea of asymptomatic spread started to trend bit by bit. It finally went into an explosion of interest, or rather, that's what they made happen in the first week of June, right? Because the media was asymptomatic, it's everywhere. That's how the media works, and that's why you see the spike. It trailed off again until very recently. Why? Because this stuff happened. We have what we're going to get into, the studies that proved that it wasn't actually what was happening. Even the World Health Organization and numerous other entities came out and said, well, it's very rare. So they just put it to bed and quietly put it in the corner and walked into other, look at this over here, look at this discussion, and getting you distracted with other things. So you stop paying attention to, wait a minute, didn't they just push us all into quarantine based on something that's sort of not happening? Yeah, they don't want you talking about that. Asymptomatic spread was the answer given to the great question. I'm not sick, so why should I have to be locked down? Why are we quarantining the healthy? And what possibly could it mean, in any case, to be sick without symptoms? Why are half the PCR positive tests assigned to people who otherwise seem to be perfectly fine? Well, we know that answer. We've talked about the PCR test endlessly on this channel. Even the CDC put on their website right now says 30% false positives. No one even addresses that, let alone the fact that it's much, much, much higher than that, as all the experts have pointed out, even people who used this test before we came to COVID-19. I've covered all this on the show. Even a 30% false positive is a guarantee to have a wildly inflated number with testing at such high rates. And then you add the things we'll get to in a minute in regard to PIC and the combination of flu and pneumonia with the numbers, and it's a guarantee to see an illusion. All these valid questions came to be answered by this one phrase, asymptomatic spread. You might not feel sick. You might not ever have symptoms. Still, you could be an even worse super spreader without knowing it, infecting people all around you who will carry it to people who will die from the disease. This is the argument. This was also the moment, it says, when subtly and imperceptibly, we were being asked to think of our fellow citizens, not as human beings with dignity and rights, but pathogen-carrying disease vectors. This is how they roll in the biosecurity state that they're building right now. We had to be masked, all of us, they said, because we were secretly filthy and unclean. We cannot be allowed to breathe near others. So even with a mask, we must stay 6 feet away. And as he writes, what I totally agree with, he says, as I type these words, I feel sure that if anyone reads them 10 years, in 10 years, the reader will assume I'm writing fiction or engaged in wild hyperbole. To the future reader, this is all true. I mean, think about it. He's right. This seems almost this seems impossible to those that might not have seen it coming. On June 7th, Dr. Maria van Kerkhove, head of the WHO's Emerging Diseases and Zoonosis Unit, told a press conference that from the known research, asymptomatic spread was very rare. From the data we have, it still seems to be rare that an asymptomatic person actually transmits onward to a secondary individual. She added for emphasis, it's very rare. Here's him, here's Eric tweeting, yep. We've known this all along. You know why? Because we have. We have known this all along. The information has been there for us to see that we have chose to hide, or they have chosen to hide from you.
What proportion of asymptomatic individuals actually...
Mr. Curtis, would you please state your full name for the record?
The way that we look at that is we look at... they need these individuals... What proportion of asymptomatic individuals actually...
Mr. Curtis, would you please state your full name for the record?
So the way that we look at that is we look at... What proportion of asymptomatic individuals actually transmit? So the way that we look at that is we look at... these individuals need to be followed carefully. Over the course of when they're detected and looking at secondary transmission. We have a number of reports from countries who are doing very detailed contact tracing. They're following asymptomatic cases, they're following contacts, and they're not finding secondary transmission onward. It's very rare. And that much of that is not published in the literature. From the papers that are published, there's one that came out from Singapore, looking at a long-term care facility. There are some household transmission studies where you follow individuals over time and you look at the proportion of those that transmit onwards. We are constantly looking at this data and we're trying to get more information from countries to truly answer this question. It still appears to be rare that an asymptomatic individual actually transmits onward. What we really want to be focused on is following the symptomatic cases. If we followed all of the symptomatic cases, because we know that this is a respiratory pathogen, it passes from an individual through infectious droplets. If we actually followed all of the symptomatic cases, isolated those cases, followed the contacts and quarantined those contacts, we would drastically reduce. I would love to be able to give a proportion of how much transmission we would actually stop. But it would be a drastic reduction in transmission. If we could focus on that, I think we would do very, very well in terms of suppressing transmission. But from the data we have, it still seems to be rare that an asymptomatic person actually transmits onward to a secondary individual.
Now, there's plenty of things she said in there that I disagree with, or just I think more evidence has come to light since that was stated that show us that there's I don't want to get into all the ins and outs. The point is that what she's stating there is that asymptomatic spread is very rare based on the information. Very clear, right? I mean, this is something that I've reported way back in the beginning. Didn't stop them from claiming that was enough to lock down our entire country. Now, it says there in regard to this document going forward. Let me get you guys back up on the document here. It says there was an understandable explosion of fury on all sides. Like in the moment when this first was talked about. People against lockdowns were screaming all over Twitter. Well, I was one of them. If this is true, the rationale for lockdowns mostly disappears. We can go back to our normal lives. We can open up everything again, or so we thought. As he wrote at the time, he says, what this suggests, of course, is that there is nothing mysteriously magical or insidious about the new virus. It behaves like the viruses the scientists have been studying for 100 years. What we do with a normal virus is be careful around others when we have symptoms, right? And this is the point. And you can't, this is blasphemy in the world of this is biological virus gospel, as far as they're concerned. You're not allowed to even question the existence of this thing. You're not allowed to question how they've told you it works, despite facts, evidence, science, and experts saying these things. Any expert or scientist or doctor, anybody that speaks up, regardless of their credentials, is immediately called a fake news conspiracy theorist without any due diligence or any understanding of the logic in what they're saying. That's alarming. Now, it says on the other side, there were predictably pro-lockdown mainstream media which decried her heresy, right? The media, right? All those very serious viral, you know, immunology and you know, doctor scientific experts on the mainstream media, right? Because we know how Don Lemon and Cuomo and these guys are just wildly intelligent, right? So the mainstream media decries this expert as heresy, excuse me. What? I mean, this is just ridiculous. I mean, remember, the World Health Organization, which you're not supposed to challenge. You'll be deleted on YouTube if you challenge World Health Organization guidelines. Yet, at the drop of a dime, the media can flip around and be like, wait, you're wrong. Experts who are supposed to be listening to me at this news desk at CNN that lies about everything, or Fox that lies about everything, we're telling you that you're incorrect, and now you're a fake news conspiracy theorist. Unbelievable. The cry was so loud that the World Health Organization as an entity, which by the way is wildly politicized, immediately started walking back the scientifically based claim. Following that, the question seemed to fade, of course, because the media was controlling the narrative. We went back to assuming that potentially everyone had the disease, enabling fellow citizens to become virtuous enforcers of mask wearing, staying home and separating, screaming and yelling at others for failing to comply. The science on the question was unsettled. We never answered whether that was the case, right? So let us go back to wrecking life as we once knew it, he says. So the science is unsettled. Do you understand how that works when we can't, we'll make a claim based on science, and because they'll say, well, it's not a random controlled trial, we need more studies. So instead of pausing everything, they just go back to what they were already doing. Even though that science was saying they were wrong, because they say, well, that's not completely accurate, or we need more research. But if it happens on the other side, based on incomplete models and incomplete research, they're willing to take your entire life away from you. They're willing to destroy your job, destroy your livelihood on the possibility. And then when more science comes out to show that it was wrong, then they go, well, we need more research. You see what I'm saying? They need the smallest concept to take everything, but even with more science and more than we've ever seen to this point, they refuse to give it back to you. That's incredible. That's called a double standard. It's called hypocrisy. The science was unsettled, so we went back to what they were doing from the beginning, which was keeping you on lockdown, even though we were showing that it wasn't the case. In this case, the carrier of rationality is a gigantic study, he says, conducted in Wuhan, China, of 10 million people. Now, simply because it's happening in China, people will immediately ignore this, despite the fact that the current sample that we're still using to test for this virus, even in the United States, even by people around Donald Trump, still comes from a sample taken from China. But they're lying to us about everything, right? Except we're still basing it on their sample from the very beginning. None of this adds up when you actually are intelligent enough to look past the political talking points. The article appears in Nature, published on January 20th. The point is, guys, if you think for one second that I or anybody else rational believes that China's government is any less deceitful and dishonest than the US government, then you're ridiculous. I've never made the claim. The idea is that China, in this sense, is being accused of something that there's no evidence for. That does not mean that China is not capable of lying about this, capable of doing anything like this, or not capable of committing crimes. That's an irrational leap because of what you want to assume I'm talking about, or because you think you don't like what I'm saying, so you try to make it something it's not. That's what mainstream media does. So if you want to be like mainstream media, then go ahead and keep accusing me of things that you don't understand. But the idea is that this is very clearly rooted in information and facts. We saw it appear in this location. That's when they said, okay, this is something. That's arguable for a lot of reasons. But then it continued to grow. Then we continued to find evidence of things happening in 2019 in Oregon and California and Wisconsin, or in Italy or in Spain or in France or in Taiwan or in Canada or in numerous places that say, look at all the evidence of this thing happening back in 2019. Or even frozen waste samples as far back as 2013. Canada and China talked about this. But sure, let's continue to just point at China and say, bad guy, you did it. And if you don't argue that based on no evidence, then you're a China shill. People's minds have been warped around this, and it's incredible. This study is huge, and it doesn't mean you should blindly trust what it's saying, but you should consider what it is saying, because it's, as far as I can tell, one of the most important studies in regard to asymptomatic discussion, and has been confirmed and rather has been backed up by more discussions and studies after this that still also get ignored by our mainstream media. As it says, the conclusion is not that asymptomatic spread is rare or that the science is uncertain. The study revealed something that hardly ever happens in these kinds of studies. There was not one documented case. 10 million people. Forget rare. Forget even Fauci's previous suggestion that asymptomatic transmission exists but does not drive the spread, which, by the way, should have stopped them from quarantining everybody who was healthy. Replace all that with never. At least not in this study for 10 million people. What do you know? There were no positive tests among 1,174 close contacts of asymptomatic spread. So the idea that they could use something like this to put you on quarantine should make you sick. Now look, if there was another competing study that they did another with 10 million people in the U.S. that came to opposite conclusions, well, you could say, well, there's more to the story here. But that's not the case. As I said, the World Health Organization and numerous other entities have already said the same thing, that it's very rare that we have asymptomatic spread at all. So you have to understand that this whole thing began on a lie and misinformation, whether it was intentional or not. 3.4%, we're all going to die, and there's how much spread? All those models that stem back to Bill Gates and their funded entities turned out to be wrong, and yet they kept pushing. Then when suddenly we go, well, why are you trying to lock us down? They scream about asymptomatic spread and they keep pushing. Then that gets dissuaded. Oh, they put it in the corner and they keep pointing to other things and they keep pushing. Here's the actual study. Post-lockdown SARS-CoV-2 nucleic acid screening in nearly 10 million residents of Wuhan, China. Stringent COVID-19 control measures were imposed in Wuhan between January 23rd and April 8th. Estimates of the prevalence of infection following the release of restrictions could inform post-lockdown pandemic management. Yeah, obviously. Wonder why we haven't done... Like right now, we have our government entities paying anybody they can throw money at to make studies about computer models and observation, if as long as they come to the conclusion that masks work no matter what you say and don't hurt anybody, despite all of the evidence and every other random controlled trial that was ever done that's saying the opposite. That's all they want to focus on. Make them wear the mask despite the evidence. But no, we can't actually do the things that we should be doing, like comparing the test results of people, or, you know, the antibody test to see if it was here before, or which, by the way, you shouldn't be forced to do. I wouldn't. But this is, of course, something that should have been done. There's a reason that it's not, because you'd find out exactly this. It says there were no positive tests amongst 1,174 close contacts of asymptomatic cases. It says in the results, the nucleic acid screening was completed in 19 days and tested a total of 9,899,828 persons from the total of over 10 million. Now it says of those 9 million plus people, 9,865,404 had no previous diagnosis of COVID-19 and over 34,000 were recovered COVID-19 patients. It's a screening of 9,800 plus participants without a history of COVID-19 found no newly confirmed COVID-19 cases and identified 300 asymptomatic positive cases with a detection rate of 0.303. A total of 1,174 close contacts of asymptomatic positive cases were traced, and they all tested negative. Now understand, this does not mean that asymptomatic as a concept doesn't exist. What it means is that these things are not being spread. So the argument that you could be, and this is what it comes down to, the point is that you could have something present in your body. And this is where the PCR test comes in. You could have the virus in your system, but not ever get sick or ever be transmissible, because you need billions of these things to actually create what causes the actual COVID-19. So the point is you can be asymptomatic in this case, and the study is showing you that out of 10 million people, or rather specifically out of the 1,174 of those close contacts with the people confirmed to be, zero. Virus cultures were negative for all asymptomatic positive and repositive cases. indicating that no viable virus in positive cases detected in this study. Meaning that the point is that asymptomatic, they're specifically talking about virus cultures in asymptomatic. Turned out that the virus, whatever was coming out, is, as it says, where was it, just not viable. Which is, by the way, what other doctors were telling us. That's why it's aerosolized particulates and not droplets, because it's dead virus that's coming out. We already talked about this. But they don't want you to think about that. None of detected positive cases or their close contacts became symptomatic or newly confirmed with COVID-19 during the isolation period. That's talking about all symptomatic positive cases. That seems pretty certain to me, wouldn't you say? Here it says, among the 7,280 residential communities in Wuhan, asymptomatic positive cases were identified in 265 communities. And only one case in the 246 communities. While no asymptomatic positive cases were found in the 96.4% of the other communities. Let me just say this again. It's all the residential communities in Wuhan, which is 7,280. Asymptomatic positive cases were identified in only 265 communities. Only one case detected in 246 of the communities. Make sure I said that properly. While no asymptomatic positive cases were found in the other 96.4. I think this paints a very clear picture, and I think you understand why they did not tell you about this. Going back to the article. The whole point is if they were to allow you to understand that the asymptomatic spread is an illusion that doesn't actually exist in the context that they're telling you it does and does not drive transmission, despite even Fauci saying that. Well, if you realize that, well, you'd realize you're being locked down unjustly. It says one might suppose that this would be huge news, and you would think so, wouldn't you, in an honest world? It would allow us to open up everything immediately. With the whole basis for post-curve flattening lockdowns crumbled, we could go back to living a normal life, or so whatever it was before this. The fear could evaporate. We could take comfort in our normal intuition that healthy people can get out and about with no risk to others. We could take off our masks. We could go to movies and sports events. From what I can tell, there was only one news story that was posted about this, and it was on Russia Today. I've not been able to find another one. People not following the right accounts on Twitter wouldn't have even known about it. That's the point. No evidence that asymptomatic COVID-19 cases were infectious. Why wouldn't that be important? Don't they want you to understand? If they find out that you're not in danger, wouldn't that be the best news of the day? Yeah, because they don't want you knowing that, because the point is to keep you in a state of fear. It says, we keep hearing about how we should follow the science. The claim is tired by now. We know what's really happening. The lockdown lobby ignores whatever contradicts their narrative, preferring unverified anecdotes over an actual scientific study of 10 million residents. With solid evidence that asymptomatic spread is nonsense, we have to ask, who is making decisions and why? Well, thank you, Jeffrey Tucker, for having a moment of clarity for everybody. This is from the American Institute of Economic Research. Now, taking this information and jumping into the next argument. So we're talking about asymptomatic spread and how that drove us into quarantine for unjust reasons. It was an illusion that drove you there. Healthy people. Now, then after that, they have a position where they need to continue to make you feel like the numbers are there, which brings us to the next discussion. Now, we've talked about this a lot. The idea of PIC, which is pneumonia, influenza, and COVID, which is how they combine all of these and then tell you the death numbers and say, well, all these people are dying from COVID when really it's a combination of pneumonia, influenza, and COVID. And it's not even a secret, right? This is COVID-19. And I'm going to go back on this and show you even more in case you feel like I'm misunderstanding this. It's very clear. And it's exactly what they've been doing with flu forever, which is this point. This is from the British Medical Journal in 2005. Are U.S. flu death figures more PR than science? Funny enough, I was reading this and I had about three other people send it to me today. So somewhere, this is kind of in the ether and people are pointing to it. That's great. Hopefully it's because we keep pointing out this concept. I heard this for the first time from John Rappaport a long time ago. And it's true. It's easy to look up. Then remember, so this is the British Medical Journal pointing to them and saying, or asking the question, are these numbers more PR than science? And you'll see very clearly off the bat that they seem to think so. It says U.S. data on influenza deaths are a mess. Now, remember, this is 2005, long before we got to the COVID-19 illusion. Right now, we're discussing the flu illusion before we got there. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention acknowledges the difference between flu death and flu-associated death, yet uses the term interchangeably. Right off the bat, that should be like, what? That can't be okay, because they're using the death numbers around flu to drive flu vaccines and to make people, and right, but if they're using those interchangeably, that's deceptive, wouldn't you say? Well, of course, in their minds, they think, well, it's okay, because we're lying to them for a good reason. We're tricking them into thinking they're in more danger because, but we all agree they need it though, right? Lying for their truth. This is where we are today. Additionally, there are significant statistical incompatibilities between official estimates and national vital statistics data. Compounding these problems is a marketing of fear. This is from the British Medical Journal, guys. A CDC communications strategy in which medical experts predict dire outcomes during flu seasons. They call that a marketing of fear because that's what it is. Please, somebody, call the British Medical Journal a fake news conspiracy theorist anti-science website. I would love it. The CDC website states what has become commonly accepted and widely reported in the lay and scientific press annually. And I mean, I've even pointed to these just to make a point that these are the numbers that they were getting from the sources you're supposed to be listening to. They're saying that annually about 36,000 Americans die from the flu. And influenza / pneumonia is the seventh leading cause of death in the United States. The links are here for you to check out for yourself. But why are flu and pneumonia bundled together? Good question. Is the relationship so strong or unique to warrant characterizing them as a single cause of death? Now, I can tell you why they do it and their argument for it, but understand right to the beginning point of this. They're using the terms interchangeably. So they're not saying flu with the secondary death of pneumonia, which we count as flu. No, they're just saying flu. So don't you think you should have the full picture, even if they're arguing that those pneumonias are caused by the flu? Yes, that's called informed consent. But, well, I mean, arguably, that's in regard to the medicine. I mean, yeah, it still applies, in my opinion. We should have the full picture on the information before we take anything. Their argument is that these are secondary issues, which is what we're seeing right now with COVID-19. And the argument is, well, because the flu causes pneumonia that's different than normal pneumonia, but then that causes your death, but we still count that as being caused by the flu. And that's a fair argument. You could argue that in some cases absolutely happens. But what's not a fair thing to do is to just broadly combine them under that argument, which is what's happening right now. And I'll show you in a moment. Now it says, the CDC states that the historic 1968 to 1969 Hong Kong flu pandemic killed 34,000 Americans. At the same time, the CDC claims 36,000 Americans annually die from the flu. What's going on? Meanwhile, according to the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics, the NCHS, influenza and pneumonia took 62,034 lives in 2001, 61,777 of which... I'm reading that weird. It looks like it's saying influenza pneumonia took 62,034 lives in 2001 to... No, that's very oddly written right there. 2001, and then it says 61,770 of which were attributed to pneumonia. And, oh, yes, that's correct. Okay, I'm making sure I didn't read that incorrectly. Let me read that again, because this is an important point. Meanwhile, according to the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics, influenza and pneumonia took 62,034 lives. It's the loss of the comma there that confused me. In 2001, 62,034 lives in 2001, 61,777 of which were attributed to pneumonia, only 257 to the flu. And in only 18 cases was flu virus positively identified. So, I mean, people would argue that they're not going to be testing for the flu because we're not in a pandemic. Nonetheless, you should know if you're going to be attributing that and then fear-mongering about the flu every year and using that to drive vaccine sales, of which is, I think, the best I've seen, 30% effectiveness. And by the way, we're going to show you some much more alarming points in regard to the flu vaccine, but as well with COVID in regard to why it's not even then you shouldn't be doing it. But only 257 for the flu. So, I mean, it's like 99% of these were pneumonia. So how is it flu then? Wouldn't it be pneumonia with a secondary idea of the flu? Okay, the argument is that it's all because of the flu, and that's why they keep doing that. But obviously the stats are wrong, and this is what the BMJ are showing you, that there's inconsistencies here. It says the NCH data would be compatible with CDC mortality estimates if about half of the deaths classed by the NCHS as pneumonia were actually flu-initiated secondary pneumonias. But the NCHS criteria indicate the opposite. So the CDC is in contradiction with the NCHS. It says cause of death statistics are based solely on the underlying cause of death, defined by WHO as the disease or injury which initiated the train of events leading directly to death. It says the CDC uses indirect modeling methods to estimate the number of deaths associated with influenza, and that's important. So they're not even having, this isn't directly from stats, they're guessing. Yeah, educated guesses, but it's modeling. It says the CDC's model calculated an average annual 36,155 deaths from influenza-associated underlying respiratory and circulatory causes. Less than a quarter of these were described as flu or flu-associated underlying pneumonia deaths. Thus, the much-publicized figure of 36,000 is not an estimate of yearly flu deaths, as widely reported in both the lay and scientific press, but an estimate generated by a model of flu-associated deaths. Do you realize how far that is from saying that this many people die from the flu? This is an intentional deception. It says, if passed, the Flu Protection Act of 2005, which didn't end up passing, will revamp U.S. flu vaccine policy. And it's, you should read that. It's ridiculous. The legislation will require CDC to pay mask makers for vaccines unsold. So our government was literally trying to get you to be on the hook for vaccines that didn't get used. Unbelievable. Through routine marketing mechanisms. It says the bill will also require CDC to conduct a public awareness campaign emphasizing, quote, the safety and benefit of recommended vaccines for the public good. That sound like, interestingly, where we are now? So the bill, they were trying to put into law that the CDC had to advocate for vaccines. I mean, I guess that's irrelevant of whether or not, there's the overemphasis on making us take these things. And we can see that's where we are now. Any discussion about any negative effects is immediately ignored or dismissed. It says, yet this bill obscures the fact that the CDC is already working in manufacturers' interests by conducting campaigns to increase flu vaccination. Guys, this is the British Medical Journal in 2005, showing you that, one, the CDC is conflict of interest at the best. They're involved with the profit side of this. But on top of that, that they are manipulating flu and pneumonia in order to sell you on the idea that you're in danger to type flu vaccine or vaccine sales. So please understand that this is coming from the British Medical Journal and that that is something that should hold some water, especially for those out there that are swimming in the mainstream media lie pool. But going back to this document, I want to make sure you understand that that's also what's happening now. So as we see them confirming that that is what happens in general with the flu, we jump forward to COVID-19 and they're doing it again, but with COVID added to it. It says the percentage of emergency department visits for COVID-like illness, so CLI is also a part of that. So they're giving you the numbers on hospital visits for COVID-like illness, which would include flu or any number of other things. That is not full, but yet they report that as COVID on the news. I've already proven this 100 times over. But by the way, that has decreased. The hospital visits have decreased, even though they're combining other things with it. What does that tell you? It says the percentage of deaths due to pneumonia, influenza, and COVID-19, PIC, has been increasing since October. I wonder why. Rapidly increased testing with wildly high false positives and combining flu and influenza, or influenza and pneumonia, in with this number. By the way, there's been weeks where it's gone down, even though they're doing that, which is just absurd. Both COVID-19-associated hospitalizations and PIC mortality for the most recent weeks are expected to increase. So this is the main point, is this is your mortality data for COVID-19. This is what they're using, because this is on the page of COVID-19. And by the way, again, I have confirmed that this is the case. But we're talking about, as it says right here, PIC, mortality. And it says up here, based on the death certificate data available on December 10th, the percentage of deaths attributed to pneumonia, influenza, or COVID-19, PIC, for week 49 was 14.3%. And while it declined compared to the percentage during week 48, it remained above the epidemic threshold of 6.5% and is expected to increase as more death certificates are processed. Yeah, it's all combined. Among the 3,052 PIC deaths reported for week 49, and here's where they add the, like, this is why we're doing this. Of those 3,052, 2,113 had COVID-19 listed on the underlying or contributing cause of death, meaning they might have not died from it, but they were tested positive when they died from something else. Or they had a test and then just died. Right? So as long as they have that on their list, and by the way, remember, as Dr., I believe, blanking on his name all of a sudden, as one of the doctors that spoke out told us that they are being incentivized to put COVID on the death certificate because they get more money from it. That was 100% confirmed. The argument would be because, well, they're taking extra precautions, they're doing extra things, so they deserve more compensation. It doesn't matter. It's a profit motive for putting COVID on the death certificate. So as we're staring at this, and as you can see that we're talking about some of them, 2,113 of them, the vast majority not being directly COVID-19, but listed as an underlying or contributing cause. And it says, and 5 listed influenza, indicating that the current increase in PIC mortality is due to COVID-19. Well, that's quite a stretch, wouldn't you say? I'm sure some of them are. But as we're in a position now where we're seeing lots of people suffer and die from plenty of other things not even closely connected to COVID-19, other than the fact that the government has put you in a lockdown that's causing it, you're going to see increases in these numbers, and we're going to call all of that excess death, which will be broadly attributed to COVID-19, despite the fact that almost all of this, in my opinion, is coming from their actions. That's my opinion, but the data seems to back it up. Now, I wanted to show you one more point before we go forward. Is we're talking about the same thing between flu and pneumonia, in this case today being between flu, pneumonia, and COVID. Now remember, this is supposed to be just the influenza. Dang it. Hey, good. This was supposed to be just the influenza map. That's what this is. This is just influenza season. Influenza-like illness activity. So technically, to be honest, this says down here influenza season, but it does say influenza-like illness, meaning COVID-19. But I argue that's not what they're including here, but just understand how wishy-washy they are with all these terms. But the point is, here is what it was. We're on December 5th, 2021, right? Seems like nothing's going on. Well, let's take a quick glance back at what was happening last year at this time. Hey, seems like a lot was going on, right? I wonder where all that is. All of that is being combined with COVID-19. That's the point. It's crazy. I mean, you can go back. I mean, here, this is our year again. You can just see that there's not much happening in these past 3 months or these past weeks, when normally there's quite a bit going on. Look at that. That's all. That's the same time frame. The point is they're combining it with this trifecta of things to make it seem bigger. And the graph makes it very clear. If it was not, we would see what would normally be seeing in the flu graph. This can't be any more clear. And the other point was that there's a profit motive here. There is a financial incentive to do this, which should be not okay at the very least, guys. As RFK Jr. pointed out the other day, it's the equivalent of the EPA making half of its budget from selling coal. But we allow it here with the CDC because there's been a decades-long propaganda campaign to convince you that any negative news about vaccines is just simply crazy, despite all of the evidence. Close ties and financial entanglements, the CDC guaranteed vaccine market. A tangled web, it reads, the long-standing conflicts of it. And I hope that you will think this is fake and take the time to research it. It's all completely backed up by evidence and source material. The long-standing conflicts of interest that hold the ACIP, which is, I believe, is right up here. Right there. The American College of Observational... Oh, no, that's the wrong one. Right here. Excuse me. Right there. The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. So this is a faction of the CDC. And it says the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, the ACIP, has issued annual vaccination recommendations for U.S. civilian populations since 1995. Now, the ACIP works in partnership with leading medical trade organizations such as the American Academy of Pediatrics and so on. Right? So it's very influential. It says the longstanding conflicts of interest that hold ACIP members captive to pharmaceutical industry interests are well known. and well-documented. In the early 2000s, a four-month investigation by United Press International identified a web of close ties and financial entanglements between the ACIP members and vaccine companies, including sharing vaccine patents, owning vaccine company stock, getting research funded or money to monitor vaccine testing, receiving funding or academic departments or appointments. Now, remember that we just talked about the vaccine for Moderna and that Fauci and numerous people under his control have patents for things in regard. They're going to make money in perpetuity from the if this vaccine is used, and it already we already see that it is. That cannot be OK. That's a huge conflict of interest. It says in 2003, Congressman Dan Burton described the paradox that of the CDC, quote, routinely allowing scientists with blatant conflicts of interest to serve on influential advisory committees that make recommendations on new vaccines. Right. So the CDC is allowing this as well as policy matters, even though, quote, these same scientists have financial ties, academic affiliations, and other vested interests in the products and companies for which they're supposed to be providing unbiased oversight. That's called regulatory capture. The CDC, the FDA, this EPA, these groups have been taken over by corporate entities and by politics. Long since been seen. It says individuals appointed to the ACIP must file an Office of Government Ethics form and annually update that form. It says, however, the CDC has shown itself only too willing to issue what they call conflict of interest waivers to the people that have obvious conflicts of interest if it ascertains, as it routinely does, that, quote, the need for the individual services outweighs the potential for conflicts of interest created by the financial interest involved. Right? That's a cop-out, meaning that these people this is the air around the vaccine discussion, that this is, oh, it's just such important work, and that we have to do that. It's the same thing with the trials, where suddenly they say, we're going to test more after the emergency use authorization. But then they get that authorization, and then they go, oh, it's a moral dilemma. We have to give the vaccine for these people because it's such an important thing, and they don't test anymore. Because they say, well, we can't just, in good conscience, not give somebody this and instead give them a placebo. We have to give it to them. To say that these people are too important, so we need to overlook their obvious financial profit motives and conflicts of interest, is ridiculous. Especially when these are the same people that are supposed to be keeping you safe in regard to these companies, but they have financial motives with these companies. That's disgusting. But sure, listen to them. Just understand that you're in so much danger all the time that we just have to do this. According to an investigation by the Committee on Government Reform in 2000, the CDC not only frequently grants waivers like that, but also looks the other way when the ACIP members provide incomplete financial disclosures, because that's totally honest, right? That's just a friendly misunderstanding. These things are disgustingly corrupt, all these entities. The CDC is a major player in the vaccine marketplace, buying half of all childhood vaccines in the U.S. and then selling them to contracted public health agencies through the Vaccines for Children VFC program, which pushes free and low-cost vaccines on indigent children. Over the past three decades, the CDC's vaccine purchases have increased 15-fold as the average cost of fully vaccinating a child to 18 rose from $100 to $2,192, while vaccine companies have raked in the profits, billions and billions and billions of dollars. It says, in fact, the CDC and the National Institute of Health, of course, profit handsomely from their ownership or co-ownership with private sector partners of vaccine-related patents. This is what I just talked about. In early 2017, analysis of Google patents and the results showed that the CDC held 56 patents pertaining to various aspects of vaccine development, manufacturing, delivery, and adjuvants. By May 2019, the search terms Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Vaccines retrieved 143 results in the Google patent search engine. And a separate legal website displayed 10 screens worth of CDC patents. Patents on the things that they're supposed to be holding accountable, both vaccine and non-vaccine related. The author of the 2017 analysis suggested that the large number of patents held by the CDC, quote, deserves an in-depth review to determine exactly what current financial relationships with vaccine makers now exist and what current impact those revenue streams are likely having on vaccine safety positions. But yeah, let's just jump forward to now and pretend like it all got worked out somehow. Nope, not at all. In fact, it's all exactly the same way right now. Here's another discussion from Foreign Policy Journal, how the CDC uses fear marketing to increase demand for flu vaccines. January 19, 2018. By the way, this was 2019 in June. Going back 1 year further, it says the CDC's questionable estimates of annual flu hospitalizations and deaths align with its fear marketing strategy to increase demand for flu vaccines. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention claims that its recommendation that everyone aged 6 months and up should get an annual flu shot is firmly grounded in science. The mainstream media reinforced this characterization by misinforming the public about what the science says. I find this to be really interesting. It says a New York Times article from earlier this year, for example, in order to persuade readers to follow the CDC's recommendation, cited literature reviews of the prestigious Cochrane collaboration to support its characterization of the influenza vaccine as both effective and safe. The Times, New York Times, said that the science showed that the vaccine represented a big payoff in public health, and that harms from the vaccine were almost non-existent. Now, please recognize how very relevant this next point is to where we are now, as the New York Times and the Washington Post and all of them are doing that right now with this vaccine. They're saying it's completely safe and you're going to get it's the best for everybody. And those who don't get it should be quarantined and should have health. We should have immunity passports. It's all coming out. So back then, the New York Times said that this was safe and effective. What the Cochrane researchers actually concluded, however, was that their findings, quote, seem to discourage the utilization of vaccination against influenza in healthy adults as a routine public health measure. So they said we should not be mass vaccinating everybody if they're healthy. And the New York Times said, great study says we should all get vaccinated because it's safe. You recognize where we are now? They lied to you for an obvious agenda. And yet, we can't see them doing it again now. It says, furthermore, given the known serious harms associated with specific flu vaccines, which we'll get into next, and the CDC's recommendation that infants as young as 6 months get a flu shot, despite an alarming lack of safety studies for children under two, exactly where we are now, quote, large-scale studies assessing important outcomes and directly comparing vaccine types are urgently required, which they never did. The CDC also recommends the vaccine for pregnant women, despite the total, absolute absence of randomized controlled trials assessing the safety of this practice for both expectant mothers and unborn children. This is all the more concerning, it says, given that the multi-dose vials of the inactivated influenza vaccine contain the preservative thermosol. Which, by the way, is right here, in case people somehow think that's not true. Flu vaccines and multi-dose vials contain Thermosil to safeguard against contamination of the flu. Thermosil you should never, ever, ever want to put in your body. It says, which is half ethomercury by weight. Ethomercury is known as a neurotoxin that can cross the blood-brain barrier and accumulate in the brain. It can also cross the placental barrier and enter the brain of the developing fetus. I wonder why that would be something they would push. The Cochrane researchers also found, quote, no evidence to support the CDC's assumptions that the vaccine reduces transmission of the virus or the risk of potentially deadly complications. The two primary justifications claimed by the CDC to support its recommendation. That's incredible. No evidence. This is the study the New York Times just pointed to in this discussion and said, see, it's good. It's safe. Take it. And everybody should. And they're telling you that they found no evidence to support the assumptions that it reduces transmission. Does that sound? That's exactly where we are right now. And it says, or the risk of potentially deadly complications. It says those numbers do not represent known cases in regard to the numbers they're telling us about flu. This is confirming the other discussion. They do not come directly from surveillance data, but are rather based on controversial mathematical models that may greatly overestimate the numbers. These are the numbers they're telling you in regard to flu that we just said in the other document also that's based on, from the British Medical Journal, guesses from models. That's about flu-associated deaths. It's incredible. But going back to this point, I want you to remember this, blood-brain barrier and accumulate in the brain. Remember that we're talking about the test that has been pushed back to your blood-brain barrier in a very alarming way, but I want to take this opportunity to play this clip again. A very, very important clip that I think that you should all see if you have not yet seen this.
heard earlier that there's no real concern about aluminum because it's such a small amount, and so it really shouldn't matter. But the kind of aluminum that we put into vaccines is a different kind of aluminum that we see environmentally. This is called a nanoparticle, and nanoparticles bind really tightly to the bacteria antigens, the virus antigens, the food protein antigens, and any other contaminants that are in the vaccines that we may not know about. And we know that the biochemical properties of nanoparticles is that they are capable of entering the brain. And so we have not evaluated the safety of the aluminum nanoparticle and its injection and where it goes when it gets into the body and whether it gets into the brain. Do vaccine ingredients belong in the brain? No. Do they get into the brain? No one has ever studied it. But animal studies using the same chemicals that are in vaccines that we give to children directly demonstrate that the vaccine ingredients do enter the brain. We are ignoring this information. There are scientists in Europe who've actually done studies on the aluminum nanoparticle and have shown that it can persist in the brain for years and decades. And so what we're seeing is a large outbreak of neurodevelopmental disabilities in adults, including Alzheimer's. And one of the main factors that they're finding in the brains of people with Alzheimer's is the aluminum nanoparticle that's directly related to the vaccines that we're giving. So we have never studied whether the aluminum that we're giving in vaccines gets into the brain, and we've never measured whether it stays in the brain and what it does if it does stay in the brain. But we do know that vaccines are supposed to cause inflammation in the body. But we have more than half of our children with chronic inflamed conditions. And we've never allowed ourselves to ask the question, if the vaccines cause inflammation acutely, do they continue to create inflammation chronically? We have 1 in 5 with neurodevelopmental disabilities, 1 in 10 with ADD and ADHD, 1 in 35 with autism, 1 in 11 with asthma, and 1 in 20 under the age of 5 with seizures. And the autoimmune diseases are exponentially rising, and we are finding that the viruses and the bacteria that we're injecting into the body, along with the adjuvants, create something called molecular mimicry, which means the body sees those viruses thinking that it's foreign, but actually finds pieces of those viruses that match pieces of the self. And the immune system doesn't differentiate between what it's been told to reject and itself. So it will turn the immune system on itself, leading to an autoimmune condition. We know this about hepatitis B. We know it about the Gardasil vaccine, and we know it about the flu vaccine. And we continue to say unequivocally that the vaccines have been studied effectively.
It's just crazy how this can be such open information, and yet we act like it's completely unjustified and unstudied and fake news conspiracy theory. I just want you to consider, oh, there's so much in that, that I'm going to show you some more clips going forward here. But the one thing I want you to remember, try to remember as much from that as you can going into these next discussions in regard to the blood-brain barrier and the materials and how the prevalence of these issues in children and society. But I want you to remember the animal trial discussion. The idea that the animal trials are so incredibly necessary because that's where we find out how it reacts in the real-world setting. I'll let them explain it in the right way because I'm not a scientist. But there's something to that. And where we are now, and even as Pfizer was just speaking with mainstream media and said, we didn't cut any corners, we didn't skip anything. Everybody knows they skipped the animal trials. There's no way you can argue that that was just something that was supposed to happen. So next we're going to play a clip of RFK again, RFK Jr. He's in a show with Del Bigtree, and they both have some very, very interesting things to say. Now he's talking about something in this video called pathogenic priming. Now, I've talked about virus interference. I just blanked on the other term he just used. But we're talking about something that implies that the vaccine you're given will actually increase your risk. The very thing that they will never admit it happens, despite mountains of evidence of that happening in past vaccines. But this is something that's very real and that is verified by past studies. One of them in regard to the dengue vaccine that Fauci was involved in, as you'll hear him talk about, and how that caused these people to get more ill. Increase their sickness when confronted with the very thing they were being vaccinated for. think about that with what we're dealing with going forward and whether or not that becomes something else instead of saying, well, the vaccine was a problem. It was something else that happened. Or Iran hacked our vaccine plants and that they did something to our vaccine, which if you see my past shows, you know that that's a, something that's being floated right now. They're going to have a cyber bio attack and it's going to affect our medicine. Or it's just that they were rushed out and dangerous and experimental and where there's a lot of side effects. You know, I'll leave that to you to decide. But listen carefully to what we're talking about here and let this inform your decision.
I can condemn the politicization of your health, the politicization and the commoditization.
Man, am I just off the ball, off my game today with my clips. I was going to play that one next, but we'll get to that too. Because he mentions the animal trials as well, as you might remember. Here we go.
Government's been trying for almost 30 years to develop a coronavirus vaccine, and it's been unsuccessful. And beginning in 2002, there were three outbreaks of coronavirus, we call them SARS, at that point in MERS. The first SARS was a natural illness that jumped from a bat to human beings. The second two were lab-created that escaped and infected human beings. And so the governments of China...
Just picture me quoting, escaped, as opposed to used or manipulated or tested, right? I know I'm a conspiracy theorist, right? But the point is that someone like Dr. Francis Boyle, who wrote the Biowarfare Act, openly tells us that these things are being used and manipulated. That's what gain-of-function research is. So we can say that they just randomly leaked out of the lab, or we could at least consider the possibility that it was tested on individuals, like they've done, as they've admitted to 239 times in American history.
And a consortium of Western governments all got together and put millions and millions of dollars into an effort to develop a coronavirus vaccine. And between 2002 and 2012, 2014, they worked very hard to do that. And what happened is they developed about 35 vaccines. And four of them were really promising. They chose the four most promising, and they gave them to ferrets, which is the animal that is most analogous to human beings when it comes to upper lung respiratory infections. The ferrets had a brilliant, robust, and durable antibody response. But then something horrible happened. And those ferrets were challenged when they were exposed to the wild virus. They got horribly sick. They got inflammation throughout their bodies, and they died. Yeah.
Inflammation throughout their bodies. Remember, he's talking about the chronic inflammation? Very telling.
And the scientists remembered that something very similar had happened in the 1960s where they had developed a vaccine for RSV, which is very similar to coronavirus. It's an upper respiratory infection ailment. They had skipped the animals and given them directly to 35 children. And the children, again, had developed a very robust antibody response. But when those children were exposed to the wild virus, they got very, very sick, much sicker than unvaccinated children. Two of those kids had died. It was a scandal. And they realized when the same thing happened with the ferrets, that there was something that they called enhanced immune response. It's also called pathogenic priming. And what it means is that when you get the vaccine, it appears that you have an antibody response, but when you actually encounter the wild virus, you become much sicker. And it actually creates a pathway that virus hurts you a lot more than with unvaccinated people. So this was 2012.
Before I go to the next one, it's incredible to see how the science, right, is there. The fact that they've seen this before, that skipping the animal trials and going right to humans is why they missed that. And we'll get to this in a moment. But the point is that it caused the inflammation in the children and when they were confronted with the actual virus in the wild, it caused them to be even more sick. And this is something that's a very real possibility. Why is this not being considered with what we're talking about now? And especially if we've skipped the trials and rushed this out. I mean, the point is, guys, there's so many reasons why you should have, you need to be informed about the actual risks. That is actually informed consent, something that they are absolutely ignoring and skipping right now, despite that being your absolute right.
So this was 2012. In 2014, NIH under Fauci developed a dengue vaccine, which had some signals in it that there was pathogenic priming. In other words, in the clinical trials, they saw some signs that you could get an antibody response but get much sicker when you were exposed, but they ignored them. They gave it to the Philippines, and they gave hundreds of thousands of children this vaccine. And when the dengue came around, those children became horribly ill, and 600 of them died. And in the Philippines today, people are being criminally prosecuted for that.
Fauci was involved with that, right? This is something that they were involved with. They chose to ignore what the science showed them. Why? Does that sound, there's a pretty easy guess there. I'm not going to say I know for sure. But the point is that when you skip something that potentially shows a danger of something that they've already seen in the past, that seems to suggest something far more than just ignoring the danger. You chose to ignore that. You chose to test that. Why? There's a lot of testing happening around the world, especially in places like Africa, from the so-called good guys of the world today. That's what we need to understand. Testing happens in these war zones in places like Gaza and Yemen, and it happens on people that are under the shoe of these very people that are trying to liberate. In reality, they're trying to control. So it's disgusting to realize that Fauci's involved with a vaccine that showed that that was possible, likely even, and they ignored it, and it ended up happening. And here is Fauci currently at a leading position in the safety discussions of our vaccines once again.
So the danger with the coronavirus vaccine is that you really need to test it on animals first to make sure whatever the vaccine is, that we don't get that, you know, that really great immune response followed by lethal infections.
Exactly.
And it's very, very strange to me and seems almost criminally reckless.
Now, remember the Pentagon study, the 36% more likely. This is the same. They're talking about the idea that they pretend is fake news. The idea that taking this will cause you an increased risk of other infections. So at the end of the day, it's causing an increase in other respiratory issues, which all get counted as COVID-19. And it just increases. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And they skipped the animal trials that would have shown us that that was possible. Does this beginning to seem like it's completely set up?
That Anthony Fauci is allowing these companies to skip animal trials and to go directly to human trials.
I think if you think about it, too, how dangerous, what he's talking about, how dangerous that is. They will say to you, every scientist involved says, we don't know why this antibody immune enhancement reaction is happening. They don't know why it happens. So imagine you have 100 companies right now in this amazing race to make a vaccine that could literally make them about $750 billion if they win it.
Right, and that has nothing to do with their decision-making process. You know, a few hundred billion dollars, that's nothing.
But what happens if they're testing it on a virus, right? They're going after a specific virus. We now have 30 mutations already of coronavirus, some of them very significant changes in the protein. What happens if you made a vaccine that actually gets over this problem, that they know is a problem? Tony Fauci saying publicly there's a chance that this could make people more sick, so we got to be very careful. What happens if they think they got around it, right? And they put out the vaccine. Bill Gates gets his wish and Tony Fauci that everyone's forced to take it around the world. Then all of a sudden a mutation comes around and we start seeing it trigger this antibody immune enhancement in people that were vaccinated. Only problem now is we've all gotten this vaccine, and now we're not having a 0.1 to 0.3% death rate. It's 20% or 30%. People are having the same issue as the ferrets. You could honestly wipe out our species with a vaccine that was rushed to market, that didn't do proper safety testing, and that's exactly what they're describing this as. They're putting two of the most dangerous words together in every article about this vaccine: rushing and science. Wow. Those two words should never be in a sentence together.
Well said, Dell. Well said. I would love to have Dell on the show. That guy, he's been doing some great work for a really long time. But this stuff's all out there. The information is there. The science is there. The research is there. The question is, why are they, one, keeping it from your view, and why do they not use this in regard to their decision-making process? It should make you ask these questions. Now, these are questions that may have answers that would make sense, but we don't get to hear them because we're not allowed to ask these questions. We're not allowed to have a discussion about things that they claim were, you know, that if we dare even poke at, will cause vaccine hesitancy and will stop people from getting this thing that is just already predetermined to be absolutely for your best interest, despite history showing you that that tends to be the opposite. Like, historically speaking, if you look back at all the times, especially when they've rushed a vaccine, as has happened before, it ends up hurting people. Why can't we remember our own history? I swear, Americans have the attention span of a housefly in this country. They wave something. I use the analogy of the cat toy, right? That's all the media does. We're getting on to something and they dangle a new cat toy story and everyone goes, oh, look at this story. And we all jump over here and we miss what we should be focusing on. It's disconcerting. But keeping all this in mind, I want to play the next clip to show you what Dr. Lyons also, Lyons Weller also said. I don't know if it's Weller or Wheeler, but I played this before as well. And this clip is a little more specific on the animal trials, but I want you to see that it's not just one person. And what, you know, I have half the people out there probably going, oh, RFK Jr. or so-and-so because of whatever you heard from whatever channel. But this is another scientist, another medical professional.
I can condemn the politicization of your health, the politicization and the commoditization of the American citizen's health. Pennsylvania citizen's health is not a commodity. It is neither a monetary commodity, nor is it a political commodity. And shame on you if you have changed your position or held on to a position in the light of evidence from data from studies that tell you that your position is wrong simply because you disagree with President Trump. Shame on you. You're hurting people, you're hurting society, you're destroying businesses. Shame on you. Now that I got that out, I can talk about some science. Okay. Historically, vaccines for coronaviruses have had a terrible safety record. There is a condition known as disease enhancement due to pathogenic priming. And this was discovered in vaccinated animals in past vaccine safety studies. When they did conduct vaccine safety studies on animals on coronavirus vaccines, where vaccinated animals got more serious disease after being vaccinated and then when they acquired an infection from the wild type vaccine.
Now, it's important to remember what he's saying right there is a little different than what RFK was saying, is that this is specifically with other past coronavirus vaccines as a category, right? SARS, MERS, these kind of things, the common cold, other coronaviruses. And the idea is that vaccines for those categories, which, by the way, very much relates, just like every other discussion we've had, despite the media trying to play the word games, the point is that they've shown an increase in the risk for that very thing with previous coronavirus vaccines. Do you not think that that's one of the most relevant points to discuss? If the media had any concern about actually informing you so you could actually come to your own opinion and not just be told what to think, this would be a very important discussion point. They would have talk shows where they debated about this and had other people to come on and argue one side versus the other. No, you get one narrative, and if you disagree, you're fake news and you're anti-science. As he's literally a scientist pointing to science.
More of animals got serious infections, serious conditions, and more animals died. In my peer-reviewed research paid for the citizens of the United States of America through donations to IPAC, prior to the development of any COVID vaccines, I found that all but one of the proteins in the SARS-CoV-2 virus have what we call unsafe epitopes, right? Which are parts of proteins that are capable of causing immune conditions, autoimmune conditions, and immune responses against proteins in our own body. This is peer-reviewed research, and I'll be happy to provide the press with reference after this. About a third of the proteins that might be targeted by autoimmune conditions by SARS-CoV-2 viral proteins, either through infection or injection, target the immune system. But from the start, it looks like this virus has evolved the ability to attack our immune system as part of its disease-causing capacity. This pathogenic priming, I predicted in my study, which parts of the human body would likely be most affected by pathogenic priming. And now studies by medical physicians, by medical teams around the world, are confirming my predictions. This is not simply a respiratory virus with respiratory symptoms. This affects many tissues across the body, and there's some grave concern if you're going to get infected. But where's the grave concern if you're going to be injected with these same proteins? Not a single, to my knowledge, not a single vaccine manufacturer took heed of my warning to remove those unsafe epitopes from the vaccines before they formulated their vaccines, in spite of being emailed my study with a plea to please consider taking out those unsafe epitopes. Your body.
Now, it goes on. There's a lot more to discuss in there, which I've played. It's about 12 minutes long. The actual full clip, I think, is about 16 minutes. Well worth your time to check out. It's important to understand that the concept of this pathogenic priming, the concept of skipping the animal trials, begins to paint the picture of making sure we do not see the potential for what is obviously there. Because the Pentagon study, because of the different random controlled trials, showing this with ferrets and different discussions of multiple different scientific, it's all over. I could show you more than just these two talking about it. But the reason that they don't want you talking about it is because they do not want you to understand the actual risk. Does that sound like an honest discussion? Does that sound like informed consent? It sounds like the exact opposite. Now, on a quick note, by the way, Dean Howell posting nomorenews.org in the chat, I don't understand why people would do something like that. I don't even think Adam would appreciate that. It's like, why are you here to post a link to somebody else's content? I'm friends with Adam. I've had him on the show, but I argue that he wouldn't even appreciate that. So stop being people like that, right? If you're here, pay attention. Otherwise, go somewhere else. It's just funny how people are here to manipulate and get you to go somewhere else. Just be an adult. I'm just tired of the way the world is digressing into bad things. Anyway, let's keep on this discussion because this is a very important point. Because there's other aspects to this. Remember what he just talked about. Here's another discussion I'm seeing as Hancock warns of new variant of COVID as assisted rapid spread, or has assisted rapid spread across the country. And as I said, well, interesting that begins right after the highly rushed, improperly tested experimental injection that was just given to a bunch of people in the UK. Must just be another one of those coincidences we keep getting told about on the topic, or it could be exactly what RFK and Dr. Lyons and a lot of other people are suggesting is about to happen, that we're going to have these kind of random issues where we get something worse and mutated, and it's because of exactly that. Now, I don't know that as a fact, but after hearing RFK and after hearing Dr. Lyons Weller and a lot of other people argue that this is not just possible now, but has been proven in random controlled trials and different vaccines, such as the dengue vaccine that Fauci and the NIH were involved in. The fact that it's there and now we're seeing this. Come on, guys. I'm not saying I know as a matter of fact, and I very rarely do that unless I have actual proof in front of me. But we should be willing to consider things like this without having fear of being called a conspiracy theorist. The science is behind that, the possibility, rather. So now that we're seeing a rapid increase of some new variant of COVID, we should be asking whether that's just simply the vaccine causing the pathogenic interference or I'm very blanket on the terms, the pathogenic priming, causing exactly what they just said it would cause. Now, I also want to point out that passing information as we have the other example of the mysterious Indian illness that, I still have yet to verify what was really going on there. Interesting note, by the way, in this back and forth, this guy, M2002, who I argue is actually just in pursuit of the full truth, disagrees with my take on it. But as I said, I was really just asking a question. I didn't say I knew as a matter of fact that did happen. The point was they shared a link to just repeated statement from a video platform saying that, well, heavy metal content in the water is what caused that mysterious illness. But then it turned out that the actual government in India said, nope, that is not what happened. That's not true. Because I think it's ridiculous to think that heavy metals suddenly that's not something, unless somebody poured it into the water supply, it builds over time, right? And it wouldn't cause the symptoms we're seeing. What you're seeing here are the kind of symptoms that we're seeing from the vaccine trials. Just keep that in mind. I'm not saying I know this is a matter of fact, but what I'm saying, though, is that I also find it very interestingly relevant, this discussion in regard to the mysterious illness in India that took place in the same location as a COVID vaccine trial. So the point being, and yes, it was not the exact moment, we're talking about the same province, as I made clear in my show when I talked about it. So, and there's a lot of unanswered questions here. Why there apparently were only 86 people in the trial, as they said, or excuse me, in the 86 people in the trial, but I guess 500 got sick or so on. I'm not claiming to understand the ins and outs, but remember, if we're talking about something that can cause this, doesn't it make sense that the vaccine that they're using, especially as we don't understand what was fully in it or what they're actually doing, who knows what that could cause? I'm not saying I know what happened in India, but I'm saying it's beginning to look increasingly relevant in regard to this discussion. of pathogenic priming and the and virus interference and all the other things we're talking about here. So again, I want you to ask yourself whether you can at least ask the question, is what's happening in the UK right now pathogenic priming? Honest question. Of course, it'll be fake news conspiracy theory, but that's a badge of honor, I would argue today. And I'll continue to look into this Indian discussion. I don't know why. It seems obviously a relevant question, but, you know, I'll wait to get some more information before I keep pushing further. But as he pointed out here, also find interesting, no, they rolled flu and so-called COVID into one weekly thing on October 8th. So just like the U.S. government is combining pneumonia and influenza and COVID-19, he's telling us, as you can see right here in the document, he's saying that the U.K. rolled flu and they rolled flu and so-called COVID into one weekly thing, and that is what caused the increase. Another plausible discussion. We know that they're gaming the numbers, so it's something to consider. In any case, we know that there's 100 different ways that they could make that look like they want it to look, especially if they're desperate to hold on to control. But I'm leaning more towards the idea that we're seeing exactly what we're being warned about, and they're going to make it. And this is what I keep telling you, that the response to this, what it causes, will be used to justify the very thing that's causing it. Just like they do in war. Just like they do in their regime changes. They create chaos, then point to the chaos and say, that's why we need to be here. So if the vaccine is causing problems and they point to those problems for why we all need to jump up and take the vaccine, that's the kind of scenario that gets created with the lack of actual dialogue, with a government that makes it illegal, or rather just simply wrong, to be able to question what you're being told. Now, going forward just a little bit further from the idea of pathogenic priming, we also heard the discussion about allergic reactions. Which, by the way, I feel like this is all one topic. I really do. The idea that this is causing reactions and things in people's bodies, and whether that is pathogenic priming, which increases your risk of the actual thing you're supposed to be being vaccinated against, or it increases other reactions such as food action, or, you know, inflammation, or the things that he just listed off that are obviously being caused by our increase in things that we're not testing properly, as I see it. Shocking report on COVID vaccine adverse effects. And we already covered this. It's on December 14th that John's writing about it, but we talked about the idea of the adverse food allergy discussion that they had, and they said that anybody with food allergies severe shouldn't take the vaccine, which is kind of crazy because that's a huge portion of this country. So I maybe right there we're staring at their way to guarantee that they don't reach herd immunity, so it guarantees that they continue to get this vaccine year after year. Just a thought. But it ultimately does amount to about 50 million people potentially not getting the vaccine out of fear, which then doesn't make sense if they mandate it because they just told you not to get it. But there's so much it doesn't make sense here. But it says from the UK, The Guardian has the story, as we already reported, people with a history of significant allergic reactions should not receive the COVID vaccine. The medicines regulator has said this, and after two NHS employees experienced anaphylactic symptoms. It's crazy. And it says they just figured this out now. That's a good point, right? These are things that you'd find out in, I don't know, safety trials. But it says The Guardian is referring to the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, which has just been approved in the U.S. Two people experienced significant adverse effects that may not sound important, particularly since they have already had a history of allergic reactions, but the following quote in The Guardian article raises major red flags a mile high. He says the MHRA, UK Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, advice states, quote, any person with a history of significant allergic reaction to a vaccine, medicine, or food, such as previous history of anaphylactoid reaction, or those who have been advised to carry an adrenaline auto-injector, should not receive this vaccine. Resuscitation facilities should be available at all times for all vaccinations. Think about that. So like resuscitating you from dying. Vaccination should only be carried out in facilities where resuscitation measures are available. Please remember that right now as they rush out this vaccine. That right now, at least in the UK anyway, if you're living in the UK, your Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency is telling you that if they do not have a full resuscitation facility at the place where you're giving a vaccine, that you should not do it. It says that the facility should be available at all times for all vaccinations. So there's one thing to say right there. Be like, well, do you have resuscitation facilities? Which they probably won't. You can say, well, hey, the government told me not to do this. It says, first of all, a very large number of people have a history of allergic reactions to a vaccine or medicine or food. Now, I just looked this up quickly, and it says more than 50 million Americans have experienced various types of allergies each year. Now, this is not necessarily all significant allergies, but I argue that just this statement, if heard by someone with any allergy, will probably make them resist. Interesting. But it says, automatically, these people should not take the vaccine. How many people in general public are aware of that? Good point. He says, second, with the operation to vaccinate hundreds of millions of people running at top speed, who actually believes that that many locations where shots are given will have the necessary resuscitation equipment? It's ridiculous. Then on top of all of that, we have a bombshell statement from the Denver Post. Quote, documents published by the two vaccine companies, Pfizer and BioNTech, showed that people with a history of severe allergic reactions were excluded from the trials. Meaning they don't know how it reacts with people like that. And it says, and doctors were advised to look out for such reactions in trial participants who weren't previously known to have severe allergies. In other words, the clinical trials were already biased because they excluded people with a history of allergic reactions. Therefore, the performance of the vaccine looked safer. Therefore, no one would find out that allergic reactions for the vaccine are a major danger. And now, as if it's nothing more than an afterthought, we get, oh, by the way, if people have allergies, they shouldn't take the vaccine. That's incredible. But on the note of the allergic reactions and thinking about the idea of whether or not these vaccines are potentially creating the very thing that they're telling you is happening. It says more than 50 million Americans have experienced various types of allergies each year. Allergies are the sixth leading cause of chronic illness in the United States. Now, combine that little factoid with the idea that allergic conditions are the most common health issue affecting children in the U.S. In 2015, 8.2% of adults and 8.4% of children were diagnosed with hay fever. That's not the one. It's right here. The most common triggers for anaphylaxis, a life-threatening reaction, are medicines. Food and insect stings. Medicines cause the most allergic-related deaths. So it's the same. I mean, the idea that medical treatment in our country is the third leading cause of death is absurd. But on top of that, allergies are the sixth leading cause of chronic illness in this country. Medicines cause the most allergy-related deaths. Medicines, which they consider vaccines. That is where that comes from. That's disgusting. Doesn't that just show you that they're not actually doing their job? It says the most common triggers for it are, oh, I read that one already. I think I read them all. Oh, it was African Americans and the elderly have the deadliest reactions to medicines, food, and of course, they're the ones that they're saying, we need to give them these first without testing them in the trials, because that makes perfect sense. But just to add one little point that I thought was humorous, that and very, very on point, somebody sent me this meme. So you're telling me, make sure you can actually see it in full. Oh, you got most of it there. It says, so you're telling me, due to allergies, and as a chef, I totally get this. Due to allergies, a chef must know all ingredients of a cupcake, and that's so very true. But a doctor doesn't need to know the ingredients of a vaccine? Yeah, interesting. And by the way, that's incredibly true. If I, and Phil's that maybe not know my past, I went to the Culinary Institute of America, Napa Valley. I was a chef up until I decided to start doing this a long time ago. But as a chef who's worked in numerous kitchens, I understand that you absolutely need to know every single ingredient because people are allergic to all kinds of things. And people ask, and you need to know. And if you don't, that's your fault. Like, in fact, there are cases in this country, and I know this just from being in culinary school and so on, and different in understanding the idea of the legal aspects. There are cases where people individually have been held legally accountable for not knowing or misinforming somebody about something just like this. Do you understand how incredibly strict that is? But yet we talk about vaccines, which are arguably being pressured or possibly forced on this whole country, and the doctors don't even know all the ingredients? The ones prescribing it to you? Guys, that's just dumb. But we're in a world where that's become normal. Now, James Todaro, MD, another doctor, is also telling you, for anyone out there considering the vaccine, for the Pfizer vaccine, which is currently being distributed in this country, know that you are getting an experimental vaccine. Here's a doctor telling you that it's an experimental vaccine, which, by the way, numerous mainstream articles themselves have actually called it an experimental vaccine. I believe that was this one. I was going to save this for later. I'll come back to that document, but or that article probably in a future show. That's where I took the picture from today. But numerous doctors have made this clear, and it's not, guys, this is just a dumb argument for people that claim it's not experimental. It's the definition of experimental. It has never successfully been completed. They've been experimenting with this and failing for a long time. It's still experimental. Doesn't matter. The equivocation around it. The fact that they're still testing the side effects inside your body, you are the experiment. But what he says is you are participating in a study looking for adverse events. Right, they're testing it in you. You're the guinea pig. Think twice if you are under 50 with an infection fatality rate of under 0.02%. Yet they're quarantining you, forcing you to wear a mask, destroying your business. It's unbelievable. Image below is from the FDA's emergency use authorization for Pfizer, which we already showed you in the past. Pfizer will conduct post-authorization observational studies, which, by the way, we already talked about the pharmacovigilance, the HHS, and all these groups are going to be monitoring your body and your everything. They're going to be monitoring you for up to 2 years. And if every person in the country gets it, they'll be monitoring every single person in the country for up to 2 years. That's not something they've been trying to accomplish forever, is it? We'll conduct post-authorization observational studies to evaluate the association between Pfizer and BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine and a pre-specified list of adverse events of special interest. So they're focusing on special things and want to see if you get those things, along with deaths and hospitalizations and severe COVID-19. So they're actually waiting to see if the vaccine causes severe COVID-19. At least that's how that reads to me. We'll conduct studies to evaluate the association between this vaccine and severe COVID-19, right? Remove everything in between. That's what that says. So if they're telling you at least that they're considering it's possible, doesn't that mean that they're also recognizing the pathogenic priming? So if that's the case, why aren't they telling you about that? And why are they censoring content that talks about it? I think you know why. It says the study population should include individuals administered the authorized COVID-19 vaccine from Pfizer under the emergency use authorization in the general U.S. population 16 or older. Why? Well, right, the idea that because it hasn't been tested on people who are young. It says populations of interest such as healthcare workers, pregnant women, immunocompromised individuals, subpopulations with specific comorbidities. The studies should be conducted in large-scale databases with an active comparator. Pfizer Inc. will provide protocols and status update reports to the IND 19736 with agreed-upon study designs and milestone dates, meaning they're studying you, your body, and whether or not you get these things. I don't know why in the world anybody anywhere would think this makes sense. And as I said, New York nurse becomes the first to get the Pfizer vaccine. Oh, it's such a glorious day, right? The vaccine that they rushed out, that they have all these problems with, that weren't tested on animals, that have a high likelihood of pathogenic priming based on previous examples. Yeah, but let's just all clap because we rushed this thing out that we don't really need. And staring at her age and you know, just high, even just based on her age alone, even with comorbidities, I argue that she has a very, 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 very small chance of even getting sick, let alone dying. And that's coming directly from the CDC stats. But go ahead and censor it, YouTube, because we don't care about you anymore. Here is the other important part. British Army Information Warfare Unit. Oh, good. So military will be deployed to tackle, quote, anti-vaccine propaganda. They're literally deploying the military to stop you from discussing things they don't want you to talk about. It says leaked documents revealed the soldiers are already monitoring your social media in the UK. But just understand that that's all, if you think for 1 second that's not also happening in the US, that was probably happening from the moment this began. That's probably been happening for 30 years in this country. I'm not surprised at all. But the point is that they are actually using the military to monitor you because they don't like what you're talking about. This is straight up Cold War you know, McCarthyist type stuff. This is horrifying. But I think the reality is, guys, this has always been the case. We're only finally just coming to terms with where we are. And it's time for you to do something about it, to resist it, to stand up, to speak out, to say no. Because you know what? You have that right. Strength in numbers, ladies and gentlemen. If we actually come together across these BS party lines, they're scared of you. They're scared of you now. Imagine how scared they are if you realize that you're not on different sides. That's what all this is really about. Now, to kind of wrap up here, there's a few more things after this, but this is really an important part of this. Derek Brose shared this today, and I find this to be horrifying. One, because this is supposed to be fake news, right? I literally had a video censored 3-4 days ago in regard to immunity passports, and all I did was say it was real and point to it and say this is coming and they're lying about it. And then I quoted a bunch of experts at the end and they deleted it. Why? Because I'm not supposed to be the one telling you this real. They don't want the media and the mainstream to be the ones guiding the narrative. So let's just put this idea to bed that we have free speech, or the idea that these platforms care about being fair and equal. They are politically driven. I mean, what we need to do is just literally understand that that Facebook, Twitter, Google, YouTube, they are the government. I mean, how dumb is it they point to things like RT, which, by the way, are also completely tied to the government, but the idea that they're state-owned entities and then act like Fox and CNN and all these other things are just completely independent. God, we're children sometimes when we just don't want to see where we really are. And none of this should reflect on how we perceive this country, because we are the country. What's happening is our government, who has hijacked it and acting like they're caring about what we want, have driven in a direction that is so counter to American values that they have to lie to you to make you believe that you're still there. They have to lie to you about doing good for the world when they go out and destroy and kill and rape and murder. That's the truth. And the studies and the science and the information about everything we're talking about is all there for you to see. The question is whether you're willing and interested enough to actually step outside the bubble and look at it. That's all this comes down to right now. Here's how we handle people who refuse to get the COVID vaccine. You know, the thing that was fake news. That'll never happen. Privacy passports. I think it's funny how he starts out, the government can't force people to get vaccinated. Well, the government says different. I mean, they literally say different. Both in Congress, I've seen 100 different examples so far where they lay it out to where, well, if we really wanted to, we could. The UK already has documentation for that. The US government already has. It's already there. We all know in our hearts that it is wrong, and it's also unconstitutional. But I just find it funny. The reason he's making that argument is to lull you into the argument of why these passports need to happen. It's horrifying. As it reads, and yet even with all the outreach that's been being planned now to black communities, rightly suspicious of the government. Oh, thank you for allowing us to be rightfully suspicious. To conservatives poisoned by, now think about it for a moment right now. Listen to the breadth of where these things are. Black communities, conservatives poisoned by Trump and Fox News denialism, despite the fact that Trump is aggressively pushing the vaccine. But who cares about facts? Let's just make sure we segregate these things into different political points. To the left-wing anti-vaxxers, getting to herd immunity might take months. So didn't he just describe everybody? Like, at least in regard to the way they perceive it. I know I'm the one that will always tell you that, 45% of this country registers independent. But as far as they perceive this, they just describe the whole country. And so we're the ones? Like, what you're trying to do there is convince all of us to go along with this ridiculous plan, not just to convince this small faction of people that are anti-vaxxer. Conservatives poisoned by Trump is a dumb statement because, again, Trump is very adamant about the vaccine. So if anything, they're going against what Trump is saying. But sure, just lean into your aggressive Trump derangement syndrome and make sure it's about Trump in that case. Then he says left-wing anti-vaxxers. They would be calling somebody like RFK Jr. an anti-vaxxer, despite him openly saying why some of them have uses. It's because they just don't want you realizing that there's nuance here, that these people have actual science behind what they're saying. But recognize he's talking about everybody and acting like this, get this fringe corner to get along with us. He says, and in the meantime, a 95% effective vaccine, which, by the way, nobody has proven that yet again, here's another hack journalist regurgitating what a corporation has said about their efficacy and not really shown anybody. 95% effective, especially in a trial that is designed to succeed. He says a 95% effective vaccine is not good enough. You still have a 1 in 20 chance of catching a lethal disease at the grocery store. So wait a minute. If you get the vaccine, but other people haven't, can you explain for me why you still have a chance of catching it? I thought you just got the vaccine. Doesn't that mean you're safe? Oh, but it doesn't, though. You see, the fallacy in this argument is that we already know that it won't stop transmission. So why would you need to force us to do it to stop you from catching it? This circle of logic is absurd. They want you to think on one end of the argument that if you get this thing, you're safe. And that the danger is that the other people aren't getting it, and so it's continuing to spread it. But you just got it. And if you argue that all the majority of people are getting it, it's only us fringe over here that aren't getting it, why does that put you in danger? The argument is that is some kind of danger to greater society, but the idea is that it's a personal choice. It's my choice with my body and my safety. If you're all getting vaccinated, then you should be safe under the argument of this vaccine. It's like, think about the idea of like skydiving. The argument they're making there is that I'm putting myself at risk by not doing it in regard to the vaccine. It's the same as saying, well, no, you can't go skydiving because you're putting yourself at risk. But it's my choice. I'm allowed to make decisions about my body and how I want. I mean, even if I do think it's a risk, that's still my choice. But let's keep going. It says, even if it would be constitutional, he says. Let me start back at the top. I believe I feel like there's parts that I want to go through on this. I want to read this pretty much all the way through because I feel like the points here, I need to show you how they're trying to paint this picture. He says, Americans are about to enter a new phase of the pandemic in which life-saving vaccines are at last a reality. Right. Like, again, just stating as a matter of fact that that's the case, even though that's clearly not been proven. Life-saving vaccine. Do you mean the vaccines that are going to just mildly reduce the symptoms if you ever catch the thing that you probably won't die or get sick from? Yeah. Good times. Life-saving. The next several months will be confusing with light visible at the end of the tunnel, but a darker tunnel than ever. No, like a dark winter, you mean? Yeah. Amidst thorny ethical questions of who should be prioritized. But the months after, that will be even more confusing, and we need to start preparing to answer those questions now. By April or May, according to experts, which ones? The ones they like to point to, right? Not just experts at large, but the ones that say what they want them to say. Most Americans want vaccines will have gotten them. The trouble is that, as of last month anyway, 40% or so of Americans say they still need to be persuaded, I guess. I argue that most of them say they won't get it. For life, for the economy to return to normal, he says we need most people to get it. That's not true. The life in your economy and your life could go back right now based on the safety, based on the information. The fact that it's not is because your government won't give it back. They've stolen this from you and they're holding it hostage until you take what they're telling you to take. That has nothing to do with COVID-19. So much at stake, he says, safe hospitals, stores, businesses, mass transit, school, air, and cultural institutions, not to mention the economics that depend on them, our psychological well-being and our entire way of life. Yeah, it all hinges on this vaccine. That's what he's trying, building this up. And yet, even with all the outreach that's being planned, as I said, it's all everybody's fault, is the point of that sentence. Now, keep going forward. It says, too much is at stake to wait for people who refuse to get vaccinated. We need a plan to move forward without them. It's this collectivist mindset, guys. This is the technocratic mindset. This is where they're building. Let's dismiss a few options out of hand, he says. And remember that the UNESCO document, the international law, says very clearly that they don't have the right to put society's needs over yours. But since when has the U.S. government ever cared about international law? Let's dismiss a few options out of hand, he says. No, we won't be locking anyone up for refusing to get a shot. I'm glad you somehow have a crystal ball and know that won't happen, even though they're arguing stuff just like this. But then he goes on to say, even if it would be constitutional, he is actually arguing that it would be constitutional to force you to take this and then lock you up if you don't. He says it is un-American and would provoke massive resistance. He is actually saying that it would be constitutional to lock you in a cage if you do not take a vaccine that you're not informed on. Or the fact that it would be constitutional to force you to do anything in your body. This guy either does not understand what constitutional means, or he's obviously lying to you. It makes me sick to remember who these people are, though. Jay Michelson needs to understand the Constitution. and, you know, go back to school. But he goes on to say, in fact, no governmental compulsion to get vaccinated is consistent with our country's values of liberty and freedom. Consonant, a basic speech. I think that's a typo. How funny is that? It makes me very happy in this moment. In fact, no governmental compulsion to get vaccinated is consonant, which, if that was the term, means a basic speech sound in which the breath is at least partly obscured and which can be combined with a vowel to form a syllable. I'm pretty sure that's not the right word he meant to say there, with our country's values of liberty and freedom. But freedom, but think about what he's saying there is that governmental compulsion is not consistent with our liberty and freedom, but it's constitutional, though. That's a incongruent statement. But he says, but freedom is a two-way street. You may have the right to get drunk and drive however you like, but I have a right to be on the street and not be killed by you. Now, here's the thing there. You have a right to not be killed by somebody, I guess. It's a weird thing to say. But you don't have the right to control my actions because of your fear about a hypothetical endgame or a hypothetical situation. That's not how this works. He says, no freedom is absolute. By the way, that's actually what freedom is. These people are trying to bastardize words. And he says, and your safety is where my freedom ends. This is how they're trying to paint the reality for you. He's saying, again, this is putting caveats. This is putting a, they're saying, well, you have freedom up until this point. That's not what that does not, that is not how shall not be infringed or inherent rights. It's not what that means. They're trying to say that you have freedom up until he feels unsafe. But do you realize in the world we're in today that people are feeling unsafe by me looking at them? Right, there's actual places that are trying to put actual things into law that say that it's a crime for me to stare too long at somebody. We all see this happening today. So if you're going to argue that when you feel unsafe is where my freedom ends, that is the most broad, undefined, and ridiculous statement I think I've ever heard. Because you can say, I feel unsafe, and then suddenly you get to decide where my freedoms end? How about we understand that your safety in regard to how you're describing it is your perception, which has literally nothing to do with my freedom. Now, of course, when we're talking about me, let's say, driving a car straight at you or pointing a weapon, I mean, things that are actually literally tangibly unsafe. Well, that then does the point where the freedom ends is where I commit a crime. That's where it ends. Not when I threaten a crime, but when I commit a crime and then I'm held accountable for those crimes. That's why we have laws that are cogent with the Constitution. If it goes against it, no, it's null and void. It's basic stuff. Likewise, he says, just as I may have the right to not wear a mask or get shot or get a shot, you have the right to be able to walk down the street without me giving you a lethal disease. That's not true. Like, again, this is the hypothetical that because you may have a disease or because there's a pandemic going on, that it's now my freedom's end because he's concerned that I may be putting him at risk. This is unbelievably ridiculous. Choosing not to get vaccinated isn't freedom any more than driving drunk is. I can't even believe the equivocation that's happening here. You're telling me that you're equivocating the concept of me getting a shot inside my body of a substance that I don't agree with, injecting it inside my body, and that's the same as me driving drunk, or rather not driving, like choosing not to get vaccinated is the same as going out and getting in a car and risking people's lives? That is stupid. Because the idea again comes back to the concept that if you're vaccinated, why in the world do you think I'm putting you at risk? Uh-oh, doesn't that put a little stick in the spokes of your logic? Yes, it does. But this is where they come back to the idea of herd immunity and that the vaccines don't always work. But they only argue that when it bolsters their point. Because when I come around the other side and say, but wait, vaccines don't work all the time. Oh, fake news, anti-vaxxer. Just like banging your head against a wall. It's like people that can see how crazy this is feel like the only sane person on the planet right now. It's overwhelming sometimes. He says it's endangering other people. So again, how am I endangering you if you've been vaccinated? It is profoundly unethical, he's saying, for me not to get vaccinated. And two, it is coercive. The anti-vaxxer is forcing me to swim in their viral discharge. How about this? How about if you're that afraid, don't go outside? That's a choice. But you don't have the choice to say that I'm fearful about something that I'm unsure you even have, so I need you to take this thing that is also unproven for be safe. I mean, this is under the all-encompassing assumption that these things are safe, that they don't have side effects. But $4 billion in vaccine court says otherwise. You cannot, I don't care if it's a one in a million chance that I'm going to die. You cannot force me to take something that may kill me because you're afraid of what the outcome may be. Guys, childish stuff. And it too is coercive, he said. He says, are we just stuck with the dangerous minority running life and endangering? Wait, I thought we just said that about 50% of the country doesn't want it. Is that a minority? Doesn't seem like it, but I'm sure they play. It's always fun to play fast and loose with the facts when you want to sell your point. Life or your truth, man. Go for it. Are we just stuck with the dangerous minority running, ruining life and endangering health for everyone else? Let's imagine a world in June 2021 where everyone who wants a vaccine has gotten one, but where the virus is still spreading because of a large number of vaccine refusers. How does that make sense? How can it still spread if all of, I mean, okay, so the argument would be that it would be spreading amongst other people who haven't gotten the vaccine. So you're arguing that we have the right to decide whether we may catch this thing, but you got yours, so you should be safe, right? So they're, again, arguing that us putting ourselves at risk is their concern. So I go back to the skydiving concept. I'm jumping out of a plane. Doesn't that put me at risk? Yeah, it does. But that's my choice because I want to do that. But of course, even within that, I know that skydiving is actually quite exceptionally safe and the odds of actually dying are very, very slim, but it's still my choice. So my point in saying that is that I understand that the vaccine that we're taking in this is actually quite dangerous for a lot of reasons and that the risk they're claiming I need it for is actually not there. So it's my choice to roll that dice, not yours. He says, if I own a business, if I find it in my own interest to exclude those refusers, maybe I want to protect my workers. Maybe I want to have a store, restaurant, bank, laundromat, or school where people don't have to wear masks. But wait a minute, why would you not? Didn't Fauci just say you have to wear your mask even if you get the vaccine? Ah, facts. You know those things that we just, who cares? It's all about selling your narrative. The point is they keep telling you that that's going to happen no matter what. But out of the other side of their mouth, they'll act like things will go right back to fantastic normal the moment you get your vaccine. Masks are going to be thrown in the air and it's just, it's ridiculous. But the by and large, the people who buy the narrative believe that right now. And they're in for a rough few months, as we all probably are if we let this happen. He says, and where they can feel safe. Reality is, guys, safe is an illusion. You're not, you will always have danger in your life. The idea that you can have a life without danger is childish. But the government wants you to think that's the case. And all they really do is add more danger to your life. He says, and maybe I think that by doing that, I'll get more customers. No, you'll get a lot less, in fact. Right? Because you're guaranteeing that 50% of the country won't want to go in your store. And by the way, you do not have a right to force me to wear something that could put my life at risk. So just as today, and by the way, there are plenty of people that very much, people with pulmonary fibrosis, people with a lot of reasons, where blocking any air passage can literally put their life at risk. But of course, that's ridiculous fake news because masks are absolutely essential. So the mainstream media says, yeah, you know, science versus mainstream narrative. Always. He says, so just as today, I might put a mask required sign on the door. I might put a vaccine required sign on my door next June. You know, that thing that's fake news that will never happen. That trouble is that unlike a mask, a vaccine is invisible. And that is why we must take action now. Ooh, remember that point about the vaccine being invisible? I think they've got a remedy for that. It says, not the next one. We need written proof of vaccination that is as difficult to counterfeit or falsify as a $100 bill. Ah, I see where this is going, so it'll be a digital passport. We need to be standardized and easy to show others, and we need to start rolling it out in this phase of this pandemic, not the next one. Oh, the next pandemic. Okay, the one that we all know is already coming. Of course, that makes total sense. The next pandemic that we already predict. Because this is your future. Because we're going to have it's pandemic season. It's time for pandemic season. Get your mask, get your vaccines. That's why there's a next one. Because there will be no matter what. And he says, call them vaccine passports. As if he just kind of pulled it out of the ether. I don't know. Why don't we call them the thing that we've all been calling them since the beginning of this? This is stupid. Simple. Standardized documents, digital or printed, that enable society and the economy to get back to semi-normal. See, now he's not even saying normal, you know, just kind of go back to not even close to what we had before, but we'll call that semi-normal without waiting for every anti-vaxxer to see the light. Again, anybody doesn't want it as an anti-vaxxer. despite people that very clearly support vaccine technology or vaccines in general, yet acknowledge this is dangerous, like doctors who say, I'm not against vaccines even remotely, but I think this thing's dangerous. They're calling those people anti-vaxxer because they're stupid or deceitful. There's no reason that you would paint with one big brush unless you had an agenda or people with an agenda telling you what to do. He says, this is what freedom looks like. So let me ask you really quickly for those in this channel, or how about even those that disagree with what I'm saying? Do you believe that what he just described sounds like freedom, or do you sound like a government deciding what's best for you? But see, sycophants like this believe that's freedom, or at least freedom with caveats, because there's nothing like this, the argument that this is, that's the real world. But it's not, because we have a history of showing us what it's actually like up until the point where our government completely went off the rails and went right back to what they were before. Reliable proof of vaccination will enable individuals, businesses, churches, and other organizations to make these decisions for themselves. Now, you can do that right now. You can do that right now. And for their customers and members to make their decisions as to whether or not to attend. So this, again, saying that you will not be able to go to these places without that passport. For myself, if given a choice, I won't set foot in a museum or a show or a restaurant or a grocery store or pray at a synagogue without unvaccinated people either, or with unvaccinated people either. So right now, he's doing all those things, or let's say pre-COVID-19. You didn't know whether they were vaccinated before. Why was it less of a risk then? Right, just because. Because. Okay, let's move forward. And the only ethical way forward is for me to have that choice. Again, that choice to decide what you have to do. Is that clear? I hope it's clear, because he's talking about the choice about our body. See, if he was actually talking about his choice, it would be his choice about whether he wants to engage in a world where there's danger, where you have the possibility of getting something that's always there, not the absurd illusion of trying to remove danger from your life and then threaten me with things if I don't do exactly what you think is safe for everybody, and then call that freedom. If anti-vaxxers, he says, can choose not to get vaccinated, God forbid, I need to be able to choose to avoid them. Well, you can do that now, buddy. Otherwise, we're back to moral asymmetry. They can endanger my life, but I can't do anything about it. The idea that we're endangering your life when you've been vaccinated is a fallacy. Within your logic, I should say. The idea that that is what's keeping you safe. The overarching premise that this vaccine is what's making us safe. All we got to do is get everyone to take this and then we'll be good. But if you take it, or if I don't take it and you have, you're still in danger. Please explain that for me. We've seen how this can work in educational context. Fine, don't get your kids their shots, but then keep them out of school where they might endanger others. That's a very new concept that is wildly controversial, that is being protested as we sit here. It's not like it's some just established fact that we all agree on, but that's how he represents it. That way, everyone has freedom. Everyone has freedom. So even the people that aren't allowed to do what they want to do and have to isolate themselves based on your fear, that's freedom? It's freedom for you to decide our choices, sure. It just makes me sick. It says, medical records may work for schools, but for every bar, movie theater, restaurant, we need a simple document in a standard form with fraud protection. Do paper documents have fraud protection? I guess they do in some degree, but no, we're leaning towards digital passports. That's where it's going. That will act as a kind of passport to living life in 2021. We need this to be free. So now suddenly it's not freedom unless we have this. But I thought you just described it as saying that would be freedom. Oh, but it's only freedom once we get our digital passports that are controlled by the government, that you have to use to check into locations before you can go into them, based on the government's discussions and decide. Sure, freedom perfectly lines up. Again, in some totalitarian dystopia, you mean like what he just described? Oh no, he's talking about what we're living in now. The government could take choice out of the equation by requiring everyone to be vaccinated. That's the dystopian future? The fact that the government just makes what you just described happen? That's the only difference, that the government makes it happen versus you using vaccine passports to make it happen too? Why is one dystopian and totalitarian and the other one is freedom? The only difference is whether the government's making the choice or whether you're choosing for us with vaccine passports. Gosh darn it. It is just the most ignorant thing I've seen. But we don't live in that world, he says, except that you're doing it right now. And as a bonus, I suspect that when enough businesses and other public places go vax only, Get ready for that. That may incentivize some of the unvaccinated to change their behavior. Of course it will. People will choose to take this dangerous thing because they want to go back to the life they thought they had, even though that's never in the cards anymore. If they can't get into a baseball game, a graduation, or a dinner, or a veterinarian's office, they might find themselves re-examining their options. Right? So you're going to coerce them into taking something that they disagree with. Sure sounds like freedom to me. Because there is an objective truth to the novel coronavirus, he says, and the truth is that it exists. Oh, good. Let's make sure. The only reason you would assert that at the end is because you're trying to counter propaganda, or what you see as propaganda. Conspiracy theory. It kills people. And it can be eradicated if enough people get a simple and safe vaccination against it. Except that's simply not true. Right? So he's saying it'll get eradicated if we all take this vaccine that doesn't stop transmission and only lessens the symptoms. So it can still spread even though you get the vaccine, but it will eradicate it though. Do you not see how there is no actual logic? And that one thing they say here contradicts what they just said over here. And all of it just leads to just don't question anything. Like the opposite of what we're saying. Just blindly trust what you're being told because vaccines are safe. And if you say otherwise, you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. Now, this is one point that I wanted to include based on the idea of whether or not we can tell, right? He's going, well, how are we going to know if someone's been vaccinated? Well, there's something for that. But I'm not going to dive too deep on this because I believe Derek Bro is actually working on a piece for this right now. But we've talked about the luciferase enzyme. We've talked about this before. This is luciferin. It's, you know, the same basic concept. I actually looked it up here so we could read what it says. And it says luciferin is a generic term for the light-emitting compound found in organisms that generate bioluminescence. Doesn't really sound like something that makes sense in a vaccine unless it is to make something illuminate. Hey, maybe there's more to this that I understand. That's always possible. As always, I'm not telling you that's the case. I'm giving you my opinion based on the research. So my question for those out there that may know more than me about this, is there a purpose for luciferin? Or luciferase, other than creating bioluminescence? Doesn't seem like it says that in anything I've researched about it, but please inform me. The point being, as Disclose points out, the mRNA vaccine from Moderna contains luciferin, dissolved with, oh, what do you know about that? 66.6 milliliters of distilled phosphate buffer solution. In case you think that's not true, let's just scroll right back down to this so you can see it right in the study. Dissolve 1 gram of luciferin in 66.6 milliliters. Now, I'm just beyond the point where I think that this is just a coincidence. The idea that we can have Bill 6666 or luciferin in things they're talking about in regard to vaccinations, or that the literal amount that they need to use of luciferin is 66.6 milliliters. It's ridiculous. Now, I'm not even saying this necessarily means anything other than the fact that either they put it there to make you go, what the hell? Or it's there to signify something or to, I truly believe that there are nefarious people out there with nefarious plans in powerful positions that hint at things that they're doing. Symbolism. There's a lot to it. But I'm not saying this for you to dive down the rabbit hole of what that means. All I'm saying is that it's weird. It's very odd. The one, that these vaccines have something in them that could potentially cause a bioluminescence from within your body, as well as the fact that the exact amount of it seems to play into the idea of the Luciferian mark of the beast, the whole concept of what that discussion is. It's almost as if they want to taunt people. But on top of all that, here's the other document that shows you the delivery information of engineered nucleic acids. Oh, by the way, this is the things that they shared here in the first Twitter release. And it says, provided our formulations this is actually the patent for this concept. Moderna Therapeutics. Now, I think it's interesting that this is even inside of it. Now, I'm going to look more into this, and Derek Bros is going to be researching this as well. Something odd here, though, guys. There's something odd in this entire discussion, and I just don't understand why people can't see it. But I do believe, as I said in this tweet, that there's an awakening happening right now that we need to recognize. As this guy, Joe Brown, who is, you know, I got blue check. mainstream-ish, but it's more, it looks like auto magazines, whatever else. But here's what he says. I'm sitting here in the dark in my toddler's room because the light is controlled by Google Home. Rethinking a lot right now. Yeah. That's your technocratic future, where your everything is controlled by a central hub that's connected to nothing but the government. For your safety, of course. But here's what I said. I really believe this right now. There is truly a massive awakening happening right now. People aren't buying the COVID illusion. They're finally seeing how fraudulent our elections are. And many are now beginning to understand the true danger of this technocratic future. We are the majority. I believe this. Hashtag time to do something about it, right? Now, it's not, and I said below, two-party illusion. It's not a party talking point, because the election point, people go, oh, you're just supporting Trump, because they're just brainwashed into that. But I truly believe that a vast majority of us right now are very aware that something is wrong, and we need to realize that in ourselves. Because a lot of these people have never really considered that they still believe that they're the fringe. You're not. If you're listening right now, you're not alone. And the vast majority of people out there, I think, believe in the same things you believe, that we are being deceived. And as he points out in this article, which I'll just read you in a moment, and this is, he's a columnist for The Sun. He says, we cannot afford to exclusively focus on the coronavirus while ignoring all the problems. I couldn't agree more. This document is incredible. This is Dr. Klaus Reiner. Canada's current pandemic response isn't supported by the facts. This just must be another one of those fake news conspiracy theorists, right? It's almost a joke to me how many people have spoken out about this, and yet we still dismiss these things. People on Twitter still go, oh, you're such a conspiracy. You're the minority, man. You are the minority. You have the mainstream media and the government, and the rest of the world right now seems to recognize that you're being lied to. A few weeks ago, British philosophers Ian Kidd and Matthew Ratcliffe wrote about the COVID world, our new altered reality, where accepted norms do not apply. They note how the entire planet is captivated by COVID-19 as the one and only issue of importance. And they describe the, quote, enormous and wide-ranging collateral damage caused by lockdowns and other measures, added to the list of experts and professionals and journalists that have called this out. Like many critics of the ongoing tunnel vision on SARS-CoV-2, he says, I'm concerned about the lack of proportion in the collective response and allege that this response is not backed by the facts about the pandemic. Right? A doctor. I'm sure he's just anti-science, though, right? Responding to questions raised in a Toronto Sun column, Ontario Minister of Long-Term Care, Marilee Fullerton, confirmed in October that the COVID-19 death toll in, I think it's late care, the nursing homes, was compared to that of the 2017-2018 flu season. Remember when we were being censored for comparing it to the flu? Here we are. In order to detract from this remarkable admission, she added, quote, but I don't want to talk about numbers. You know, it is about people, right? Let's not talk about the thing that should show you that you're not really in danger, but let's just keep focusing on how much danger you're in. The minister shows sensitivity and compassion, and we all wish that our parents and grandparents live longer, healthy lives, but individual fate cannot be the basis for public policy. We do not make decisions based on the loudest voices or the most touching stories. We make important societal decisions on the basis of data and their scientific interpretation. Or so we should be. We are. The media and the government are not. It says, unfortunately, there are major issues with the COVID-19 data, bad enough for world-renowned epidemiologist and statistician John Ioannidis to call SARS-CoV-2 a, quote, once-a-century evidence fiasco. Once-in-a-century evidence fiasco. But yeah, it's all fake news conspiracy theory. For example, we still do not know how many Canadians die from the virus, as opposed to those dying from other causes, but with a positive test. How could you not know that number and still enforce people to be arrested or controlled because of it? It's incredible. Why are the media not reporting that most COVID-19 victims, 90% according to Canadian statistics, are already vulnerable from pre-existing diseases? We also do not know. Oh, hold on, it says, why is the media not reporting that most COVID-19 victims, right, so the people that, basically people with comorbidities, 90% of these people already have issues, and that's why. He says, we do not know or are not told how many hospitalizations occur due to serious cases of COVID-19 rather than just unrelated illness, where the patient just tests positive upon admission with a false PCR test or just gets infected in the hospital, right? That's the reason the CDC stopped reporting on this, because they just give you the lump number and make it seem like we're all in danger. The publicly available COVID-19 statistics currently rely on the PCR test, which may be unsuitable for monitoring key trends in the pandemic. The inventor of the PCR procedure, Kerry Mullis, has stated on record that the test can be used to, quote, find almost anything in anyone. The test detects genetic material of the virus in a person, but cannot determine whether a person is ill or infectious. Uh-oh. We're not supposed to say that in the mainstream media. It says the state of Florida has now mandated that laboratories specify the cycle threshold, which Derek reported on, which I reported on, a measure that correlates with infectiousness, right? So now they're going to know where that data applies. How much longer it will take our provincial governments to develop an approach to analyze and report these data? Up in the air. Probably never. In addition to collecting accurate and meaningful data, we also need to correctly interpret them. If we hear that hospitals are filling up, let's ask how this compares to the last flu season, right? You know, logic. If we're warned of possible long-term effects of COVID-19, well, let's investigate how they compare to long-term effects of other respiratory diseases. Instead of just saying, uh-oh, long-term effects, we're all in danger. We cannot afford to exclusively focus on the coronavirus while ignoring all other problems, because all those other problems are creating a huge spike in deaths and problems in the general population, which are then being pointed to as excess deaths and being claimed as COVID-19. At this point, common sense alone should tell us that the collateral damage that the pandemic response inflicts on our physical and mental health will be far greater than the harm from SARS-CoV-2. Common sense. In defending a medical doctor's professional right and responsibility to independently evaluate prevailing health practices, quote, the Ontario Civil Liberties Association emphasizes that given even in a crisis, quote, we must consider a diversity of competing views. Yeah, exactly like we're not doing now. They also decry the unprecedented sweeping draconian public health measures, which I am afraid, he says, have pushed us closer toward Aldous Huxley's dystopian Brave New World, or worse, the surveillance state of George Orwell's 1984. Let's quit the mass hysteria around COVID-19, follow long-established hygiene and healthy living guidelines, focus protective measures on vulnerable groups, and restore everyone's right to live a normal life. That's a great, I love this article because it's coming from, I mean, it's mainstream, but it's a doctor. We're talking about things that are just basic, very apparent. And yet, we're not allowed to talk about it. And of course, on top of that, the Ontario government is now no longer providing free COVID-19 tests as they begin to shift into forcing you to take them. Isn't that perfect? Isn't that just very revealing? The idea that first of all, in the beginning, there were plenty that weren't free. But of course, they eventually say, okay, we'll make them free. They made it free for the period of time where they heightened the numbers. So they pumped out these PCR tests, inflated the numbers with free tests. And now that they got the justification they need to force that to push out the vaccine, well, now they're going to charge you for that test that they're also going to retroactively make you take again and force you to do to make sure you're safe, right? It's ridiculous. They're profiting off of the situation in real time. Now that they used it to their end goal, which is what I believe was what they did with the PCR test, inflated the numbers. And now they're going to charge you for it. It's incredible. But at the end, to finish off here with a couple of financial points, I wanted to make sure we understand that this is continuing. This disgusting example of I'm trying to remember the term of, I hate when I can't remember a word, nepotism. Nepotism is what this is, where you basically benefit your family unjustly. But this is not just with Ilhan Omar. This is with everybody in the government, especially coming from Trump's administration. Well, just because he was the president and they were in charge of the funds. It would have been anybody. It was Biden, it would have been the same. The point is that they gave money to big business and let your businesses collapse. They pretended to give you money and they threw a $1,000 check at you. And then they gave trillions to big business. This was 2008 on steroids. And they use COVID-19 to justify it because we all saw it coming before COVID-19. Because every economist was saying we are building, coming towards another collapse. And they use COVID-19 to cover it up. But here is an example of why they're continuing to enrich themselves on your collapse. Ilhan Omar's husband received $635,000 in COVID-19 bailout money for his consulting firm. Right, because we know we need to bail out consulting firms because they're so essential to our survival, despite Congresswoman paying his company $2.25 million this year alone. This guy, he's been paid $2 million plus, and he needs another $500,000 plus to make sure he doesn't go under, right? Gee, does that seem like a fair example? How about the guy who needs like $5,000 just to make sure, $10,000 just to keep his business alive, but we're giving millions of dollars to big business and politicians giving money to their family? This is disgusting. But this is where we are. And this is not just the Democrats. It's not just the Republicans. It's happening everywhere. If you can't see that, then you need to wake up to the reality. As Richard Willett points out, and by the way, I believe I'll be on his show this Wednesday, so check that out. Yelp shows that 60% of U.S. businesses that shut down due to COVID, or rather specifically due to government action based on information that wasn't correct, they've permanently closed. All for a virus that seriously affects a tiny percentage of the world population. 60%, right? So as 60% of these businesses will never come back, Ilhan Omar's giving her husband $635,000 despite the $2 million they've already gotten this year. Does that make you feel like they care about your small business? Or does it make you feel like they you know, give you lip service to caring about you while doing everything they can to enrich themselves? Exactly what they point to and claim about Iran's government or Venezuelan's government or anybody they don't like, while they literally do it times 10 over anybody else you could point to. Oh, and then just to finish off here, just want you to understand that in the midst of all of this, your government just passed an important bipartisan bill on Friday that will help Israel keep Israel safe and expand U.S.-Israel relationship. So more money, more action, while you can't feed your family for a foreign country. Does that make you feel good? Does that make you feel like America first? Or does that make you realize that this government, this administration in particular, has gone above and beyond in doing things that don't benefit Americans, that in fact aggressively benefit foreign countries, and in fact at the expense of Americans? This is incredible. Just read what this says. So what I want to know for off the bat is strengthen the U.S.-Israel relationship. So you're saying that giving money to Israel is strengthening the relationship? I mean, that's not even veiled. Like, you're saying that Israel asking for money and the U.S. government giving them that money is strengthening the relationship. No, that's just saying, give me things and then I don't know. I mean, give them what? I mean, what's happening here? Is this just, it doesn't make sense to me. Because the Israel doesn't need U.S. money, and it also already gets billions of dollars of your tax dollars when they don't need it. So why would we need more? Because there's something going on with this relationship that most don't understand, that is actually very detrimental to U.S. interests. And when I say U.S. interest, I mean you as an American. The government doesn't care about U.S. interests. It cares about control and military agendas and resources. Those aren't U.S. interests. Those are government interests. Congress just authorized, and ask yourself why you didn't know about this, by the way. Do you not think they should be consumed with making sure that you're safe and that you can feed your family and that they pay back all the money they stole from you with collapsing the economy? No, they're giving billions more dollars to a foreign country in the middle of all of this. And why is it U.S.'s obligation to keep Israel safe? There's plenty of other allies that the U.S. government, and by the way, that are far closer, that the U.S. government doesn't feel obligated to keep safe. And there are other countries that don't actively attack other countries and then ask for us to keep them safe. Just a few of the highlights. So it means there's plenty more that they're not telling you that went down. $3.3 billion in annual U.S. security assistance to Israel. I just love the symbolism with the flag being above the U.S. flag, you know, typical. As AIPAC pretends like they're an American thing, when it's just, they're a lobby for the Israeli government. Let's not pretend like they're we anything. This is the Israeli government lobbying the U.S. government for money. $14 million on top of that for U.S.-Israel cooperation in energy, water, agriculture, and cyber. So let me ask you a question. If we're talking about cooperation, why is it one way? Why is the U.S. giving Israel money for cooperation? So we're giving $14 million to a foreign government and then allowing them access to our information in regard to energy, water, agriculture, cyber warfare. Yeah. So paying them to give them access to our stuff. Another $12 million over the next 3 years to enhance U.S.-Israel COVID cooperation, whatever that means. So again, paying them to enhance things that we're already doing? How does paying them enhance that? It just doesn't make sense. This is just more money going to them because they're asking for it. Okay. It's just a dedicated group. So now not only do we have the every single politician of all time needs to come out and dedicate themselves to Israel before they get elected, needs to continue to act like they're the most important ally and the most important everything all the time and that we can't even talk about them. And now we're going to add another dedicated group, a working group, to streamline defense cooperation, meaning more access to Israel to the U.S. government defense operations, U.S. government defense material, and maybe possibly U.S. defense funds. Ah, that'll help us all combat growing and shared threats. Ah, so it's more money going to them and Israel being involved in U.S. defense in order to defend Israel. That's what it's about. I mean, just growing shared threats. I mean, that's talking about the Middle East. That's what this is. And Israel doesn't hide that, by the way. Israel's open about that. Ah, $500 million for U.S.-Israel missile defense cooperation. Again, giving Israel $500 million for cooperation. No, we're paying them to build Iron Domes and then buying Iron Domes. Oh, isn't that great? So we're paying them twice, essentially. Paying, we're funding the building of these things and then funding life-saving programs like Iron Dome again. Right, because Israel continues to violate Lebanon's airspace and continues to occupy Gaza and Palestine and continues to illegally occupy the Golan Heights and continues to do all kinds of illegal actions, continues to illegally bomb Iraq, continues to illegally bomb Syria. But yeah, let's make sure we protect the person doing all those things. Or rather the government, to be specific. I don't know. I hate calling a government person on accident. These measures will strengthen and expand America's support for our ally. Ah, so it's all about expanding what America does for Israel. Does that sound like a two-way street? It's just ridiculous to support our ally. This is the Israeli lobby talking about itself as if it's part of the U.S. government or specifically America. It's just pathetic how obvious this is. Again, you know, the very clear symbolism here. We need to understand what's really going on here, ladies and gentlemen, as this is happening while you can't feed your family. I think it's time for Trump supporters and everybody alike to realize what's really happening here. And whether Trump was even aware of how this was going down, the reality is it's becoming abundantly clear. And whether it's because they're driving this in aggressively because it's an end game or who ultimately knows what's really happening, it's very, very, very clear that we are being deceived, that the bad guys are out there stomping around hurting people and screaming freedom. And we're supposed to go, yay, fight for freedom and just act like it's a good thing. As they repeatedly violate international law, repeatedly get called out by the United Nations, yet alternatively use the UN when they want to attack one of their enemies. A child could see how obvious this is. And the only reason we get shouted down is because the mainstream apparatus is powerful. And because of the blue check sycophants out there that parrot them and act like they're so smart and anybody doesn't understand is just so stupid. You're smarter than most of the people on TV. You listening right now. You are smarter, more intelligent, and apply critical thinking more than the vast majority of these talking heads that you see. I know that in my heart because you're here. Not because you're listening to me or because you're listening to independent media alone, but because you are thinking outside the box. That's what that means. It's just quite sad that doing something so normal is cause for celebration. I joked about this with Brian the other day that we are This show is popular for doing something very basic. For caring about people. For caring about human beings. For being a good person. That's depressing almost, that is so rare today that it's worthy of praise. But you know what? We're fighting to make sure that's not the case anymore. And you know what? Damn it, we are making it happen. I believe that so deeply. We will see this change, and you need to believe it too. Thank you for being here, guys, and thank you for thinking for yourselves. Thank you for helping us spread the information. That's just more than anything, more than donations, more than any other thing you could possibly think of. All they ask is that you take this information and you put it in front of someone who needs to see it. I love you guys. Thank you for being here. As always, question absolutely everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
What if the experts are wrong? What if quarantining the healthy doesn't actually save lives? What if wearing a mask in public is not effective?
If you do not have a mask, you cannot ride public transportation, sir.
My name is Dr. Jeff Barkey, and I'm here representing thousands of physicians across the country whose voices are being silenced because we don't agree with the mainstream media and the experts who are telling us what to do.
Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
Never in the history of this great republic have we quarantined the healthy. Never in the history of this great republic have we told churchgoers that it's illegal for you to exercise your First Amendment right of freedom of religion. Never in the history of this country have we been told that you can't go to church because it's not essential, but you can go get an abortion because that's essential. Never before in our country have we let criminals out of jail, but we've told you you can't exercise your Second Amendment right and protect yourself by purchasing a firearm. When liquor stores are deemed essential, but your businesses are deemed non-essential, there's something wrong going on.
We called people's utilities this week and made them pay what could have been their last check to us to turn their lights on in a global health pandemic. But you don't care about them. You didn't want to meet.
This booklet, the Declaration of Independence and our U.S. Constitution, was never designed to restrain the people. It was designed to restrain the government. We're realizing that the fatality rate of this virus is in the ballpark of a bad seasonal influenza. Do not let your voices be silenced. We will see eventually that this government-imposed cure is going to be worse than the virus itself.
Stop, man. This shit ain't right, bro.
But what's happening now is unemployment reaches 20 to 30 million people. Is those folks are now becoming dependent on the government. And what government dependency causes is a larger, more tyrannical government.
Look, he ain't even do nothing. He ain't even do nothing.
We the people want to put our government back in its place.
We want a small representative government, not a large tyrannical government. I'm here representing thousands of physicians around the country whose voices must be heard.
We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy, where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home.
So you guys are asking me to leave the store for not wearing a mask when I have a medical condition, even though yours is pulled under your nose.
There's a note that says,
I don't have to bring a note, and yours isn't even on.
You can do whatever you want to do.
It's America, right?
Listen, get out.
I cannot wear a mask.
Get out.
Do not let your voices be silenced.